Howdy, folks,
and welcome. It is the September 17th edition of Dead Pit Radio. I'm a creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill High.
Yeah. And we're the ballers and the shot callers of Horror Talk Radio.
We are the ones who make you come. We are the ones who you love to listen to.
Okay. That's a new song.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, we got a sliptastic edition of Dead Pit this week. The very first mic check that we've done in quite some time. I was looking this up. I think it may be the first one that we've done this year.
Are you kidding me?
I think so.
Has it been that long? Ain't it been that long?
I don't know. I didn't really look it up, but I'm guessing. It's been a while.
I think it's been a couple months at least. Yeah, 3 or 4 months.
It's always good to have, Sleepy on. We're going to be talking about some of his latest projects and just the general state of the DVD, Blu-ray address.
Address?
Yeah, he's going to address us.
He's going. Is he going to run down all the Blu-ray and DVD madness that's coming out?
Yeah.
It's weird, though, because as far as like Halloween goes, I mean, Lionsgate's got a ton of shit coming out, but I don't know if we're ever going to get
literally
it.
Shit.
Yeah, but nobody's really coming out with a lot other than that.
That's true, but we're going to talk, you know, we'll, you know how it goes with Sleepy. We're always bantering back and forth. It'll probably be a long segment, but we also have films to review, of course. Interesting one that we're talking about is we're close buddies with J.D. Feigelson, who is the writer of this film. And this movie, for about 2 years now, a little over 2 years, we've been talking about the inevitable DVD release of this son of a bitch. And it is finally out or coming out. I'm not sure what the release date is on that. It's either out or it'll be out real soon. Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. We're going to talk about the movie again. We did review the movie a couple of years ago. We're going to review it again and talk about the improvements that were made on the transfer of this thing. Is pretty phenomenal, to say the least.
It's never been out on DVD, though, has it?
No, but, I mean, there were, like, you know, bootlegs and stuff that were out there that were floating around, and they really did go back and remaster this. But we will, I guess, discuss that
further. Yeah, they remastered the shit out of it. Like, some companies will go back and say they remastered something, and it looks awful. Like, and we'll talk more about that probably soon. But when this was actually, like, yeah, really, really good. But also, completely unrelated to anything else, like horror-wise anyway, we're going to be reviewing Sylvester Stallone.
Oh,
man. And Lock Up with Sonny Landham.
And
your mind, boy.
That's going to be a hilarious review right there. Because it's been a while. It'd been a while since I'd seen Lock Up. I had the regular DVD of it, and of course the Blu-ray is the one we're talking about this week. And we'll hopefully help you guys decide if you want to upgrade to Blu-ray or just keep your DVD. That's what we're here for. We're here for
the public service. It really is.
And also DVD or call-in portion is going to be related to this movie because. You know, when there's not a lot of breaking news in the world of horror, we want to change it up a little bit. And we're talking about, like we did the Eastwood thing a few weeks ago, we're going to be talking about the films of Sylvester Stallone and or Sonny Landham.
That's right. Like, there's really only 5 films Sonny Landham's been in, if you think about it, that anybody would know. You got 48 Hours, Predator. I guess Lock Up we can add to that list now.
Billy Lone Wolf.
Best of the Best 2. And what else?
Poltergeist.
Oh. Mm, mom. Mm.
Yeah. But, yeah, we do have a news portion as well. We might as well dive right into it violently. I want to talk about this movie because I've always wanted to see this movie, but I've never actually seen it. Hopefully, thanks to the folks at Criterion, we may get this for, I don't know if we don't get anything from Criterion though now that I think about it, but.
Nope.
Criterion actually does, I gotta back off on them a little bit because of the Blu-ray releases are the exact same price as the DVD releases, which is fair, I think.
It's always too damn high.
But yeah, I mean, they're high anyway, the DVD releases are, but Kronos, which is, Guillermo del Toro's, one of his very first films, might be his very first movie, I don't really keep up with his filmography that much, is coming to DVD and Blu-ray on December 7th, and is filled to the brim with new extras, including a new restored high-definition digital transfer supervised and approved by the director Del Toro and cinematographer Guillermo Navarro, including optional audio from the film's original Spanish language voiceover introduction, as well as a DTS HD Master Audio on the Blu-ray. New audio commentaries, or I don't know if they're new, they're two include with Del Toro and producer Arthur Gorson, along with Bertha Navarro, baby, Bertha! And co-producer Alejandro Springall. And also included is a short film from 1987, Geometria, which was unreleased up until now.
Is that Geometry?
Geometria, might be, I don't know.
Geometry.
And he finished the movie this year, so that'll be interesting. New interviews with the director and actor Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman was in this? I don't know. I've never seen this. I remember in various documentaries he was talking about Kronos.
I've never seen any of his earlier films, like that one or The Devil's Backbone. I always hear about those two movies, but
yeah.
I've never watched either one of them, really.
Rounding out the extras include video interview with actor Federico Lupi.
Yeah, I'm Federico.
And a Steel's Gallery trailer, new and improved English subtitle translation, which is approved by Guillermo del Toro. And new booklet, which is a rarity nowadays in any kind of home video release. I've noticed that as well. Like usually either Blu-ray or DVD, you know, back in the day, a booklet was almost like you almost expected it, like you did seeing a DVD in there. And now, yeah. But they aren't including a booklet by film critic Maitland McDonough, who wrote about the movie and excerpts from Del Toro's notes from the film. So Kronos Criterion Collection comes out December 7th. I'm looking forward to it, Uncle Bill.
I am too, because I've never seen it, and I'd always kind of like to. All right, so, oh my God. You got to be kidding me with this shit. For those of you who have been long-time listeners to the show, we actually reviewed this next movie, the original, on the show probably about 6 months ago. Kingdom of the Spiders, starring William Shatner. Apparently, Stealth Media Group is planning a 3D remake of the 1977 cult classic, which, of course, follows a town overrun by thousands of migrating tarantulas.
Ooh.
In which only William Shatner can save the whole damn town. You remember that movie? That movie's awesome, actually.
Yeah, as I remember, they got away with a lot in that movie that you wouldn't be able to get away with now. As far as, like, they had to kill, like, hundreds and hundreds of spiders.
Yeah, they ran over, like, a ton of...
I can only imagine, like, how awful that would be to be on that fucking set, though, with that many damn tarantulas and shit.
Yeah, and then I think most of those people had to have, most of the actors had to have them put on their face and stuff at some point.
I'll say this, though, and I hate anything with Leonard Nimoy, or not Leonard Nimoy, William Shatner. I just don't like William Shatner. I don't find him amusing. His little rhymes and shit and his price line, whatever. I don't care. I don't like William Shatner. But I actually kind of liked him in this movie, I got to say. This movie won me over, at least for, you know, Kingdom of the Spiders.
Yeah, this is the movie that put him over the edge for you, though.
Yeah, I mean, anything else he's in, I just don't fucking care. He's like one of those guys. It's like, whatever, you know.
Yeah. So.
Something that you mentioned, not only have on the... on the script. Oh God, we have a script.
How dare you talk about that?
Is the controversy over the new Madman 30th anniversary DVD, which Code Red is coming out with on the 28th. And over at horrordvds.com, as well as the Dead Pit message board, there are screenshots posted that really compare the Anchor Bay disc from 2000 with the new Code Red disc. And almost in every photo, the Anchor Bay disc trumps it. And the Anchor Bay disc isn't even, the transfer on that isn't even that great. really. I mean, it's one of Anchor Bay's first discs back in the day, and...
Oh, to be honest, though, I'm probably not going to watch that movie again anyway, because I've seen that movie enough times, and I don't give a shit about that movie, but as far as watching it, I just want to see the documentary and stuff on it. I mean, that's really why I would want that disc at this point anyway.
Well, I've heard various stories about the documentary, too. I haven't got a... I think we'll probably visit that one next week. Maybe we'll get the chance to watch it by then.
What did you hear about it?
Well, I've heard various things. I mean, I just wanted to let everybody know, though, as far as the documentary goes, look, even though people will, if there are problems with it, people will bitch. You know they will. But the bottom line is this. I mean, the documentary was made by fans of the movie. Okay, nobody, it's not like a director was hired or anything to put this movie together. Nobody Dead Pit got any kind of money. The only thing we got were DVDs. Okay, we got one DVD apiece. That's it.
Oh, I love to know what people are saying about this shit now. Good Lord.
I'm just saying, like, I've heard from a couple of people that it was shoddily made, the documentary, and it just wasn't put together well.
Well, it was probably put together by a bunch of different people recording stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff from fans. And the thing is, and the way I look at it is this, I mean, when it comes to a lot of these fans of the film, like, I think some of them, and this is the issue, tried to overdo the technology aspect of it. Like, they tried to use green screens.
Oh, God.
And it just, you know, I mean, you don't do that unless you really fucking know what you're doing, or it's going to end up looking real bad. But I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen it. I've heard there's audio issues with the documentary, too. But I just wanted to let everyone know that, like, it's not like Code Red commissioned somebody to put together a... This was something that the fans of the movie, you know, I got in contact. Paul Ehlers was talking to me about this, you know, a while back, wanting to do it. So it was just something that the fans of the movie did. Now, as far as the, you know, I don't know who's at fault when it comes to the look of the film. And they claim that a new HD transfer was used. Evidently not. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Don May posts on that horror DVDs thread, and he had, like, he knows more about the technical aspects of that stuff. From what I understand, it was like a Monsters HD transfer or something like that that got messed up somehow if they tried to color correct, and it just turned everything that was blue, like the film has got a blue hue to it, I guess, and it color corrected that to make it like a lot more red, which makes it look really kind of washed out and stuff now. So that's the problem that most people have had with it, from what I understand.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff, of course, had, like, the crew of Kentucky had control over who handled the movie. Regardless of who did the distribution, you need a new transfer. I'd fucking get Don May to fucking do it, because anybody knows how to do stuff like that, it's him, and do it right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't look like they remastered much of anything. They used the old transfer and just did like a quick color correction on it, which
looks like shit.
Well, the photos do. Yeah. It is the first time Mad Men's been released widescreen anamorphic.
And honestly, though, like, I don't really have a whole lot of good things to say about Code Red at this point. Like, we don't ever get anything from them anymore. I don't think they give anything to anybody anymore. They've been kind of like...
Well, it ain't even that. I mean, it's...
been kind of dickish.
I've heard from a large variety of people just stories about those guys that run Code Red. And now the story is Code Red will be out by next year, which I don't think is true either.
Probably for the best, honestly.
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see. We will be reviewing Mad Men next week, so there's that. But I guess we should take a break, though, because we don't have a whole lot of news topics to get to.
No, we don't.
Yeah, but we will be back after this break here on Dead Beer
Podcast. Here at Dead Pit Radio, we're only interested in blood, violence, and titties.
For all that and more, head on over to the Dead Pit message board located at deadpit.com.
Talk whore with such illustrious board members as Dick Joy,
Bob Hammer,
and Mr. Holland's anus.
So get unleashed.
So you can fuck like a beast.
Over on the deadpit.com.
Message board from hell.
Howdy, folks, and welcome back to Dead Pit. How you doing, Uncle Bill? You doing all right?
I guess, but this shit pisses me off.
What?
Bunch of shit.
Are your diapers too tight on you?
Yeah, they're too tight.
Oh!
I got a little sand in my vagina right now. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Rob Zombie then. How about that? That'll make everybody happy.
Yes, we can.
apparently, after a world tour and a new album, the old shit ass is gearing up for a new movie announcement. He says, big movie news coming soon. Finally. He stated this via Twitter. Of course, he's recently been attached to direct the remake of The Blob, along with a sequel possibly to, or a prequel to The Devil's Rejects. And his script, Tyrannosaurus Rex, has also been in development for hell and ever. So who knows?
Finally, Rob Zombie has come back! Making shitty movies.
Yeah, I don't give anything he does much hope in hell, especially if it's a remake of The Blob.
No. Anything remake-wise Rob Zombie touches, it's almost like the anti-Midas touch. It just turns to shit.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's...
The Blob will be like, hey, bitch, fuck you!
Sid
Haig. I'll rape your fucking skull!
Sid Haig will be The Blob!
Tootie fucking fruity. Yeah.
I mean, how'd you like me to skull fuck you to there?
Skull fuck you to fucking hell. Yeah. So, I don't know, I'm sure our good buddy Strebo with the Mutantville Players are shitting himself right now. That motherfucker loved Rob Zombie.
I liked that movie. I thought it was good.
But excellent news, though. Even though we didn't hear back from Eli Roth last week, I'm not really surprised.
Me either. He's scared. He's scared of us.
Come on, Eli. Don't be scared. You're running from Dead Pit. That's what I heard.
Come on, Eli. Be a man, Hogan.
Yeah. Barbara Nedeljkova. The Hostel star has been cast. Oh, yeah. She's still getting roles. Children of the Corn, The Dweller, is her latest film.
Buddy, they're making all them damn movies. God.
I'm looking forward to it. Children of the Corn.
I really am.
I think it's Children of the Corn 8.
Mm-hmm.
The Dweller. That's if you don't even count the remake. So
no,
I guess
nobody counts that. Really.
There's a total of fucking 9 Children of the Corn movies, not counting Children of the Corn, The Dweller. What's funny is, like, we've always mentioned this, too, on the show. It's not like any of them were ever hits. Like, even the original movie wasn't that big of a hit.
I thought The Gathering was a big hit. The second one.
How about Fields of Terror?
Yeah, and Urban Harvest, that was the biggest one out of all of them.
Urban Harvest is actually pretty funny.
That's like The Godfather 2, the whole series.
Yeah, but the film is being directed by Joel Swizen. And in the film, a couple, Tim and Allie, head out to L.A. In the very warm California desert environments to see Tim's father. The car overheats and they are forced to stay overnight in the home of a questionable couple and their young child.
I'm scared.
Evidently, looks a lot like John Hensley or whatever his name is. John Hensley?
John Hensley. Who the hell is John Hensley?
The little kid. I don't remember his name. The little kid in the original Children of the Corn.
John Franklin?
John Franklin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where in the hell did I get John Hensley?
I have no idea who the hell John Hensley is.
It sounds like some sort of Christian singer or something.
Here he is, John Hensley.
The Christ Power Hour, John Hensley.
I love the Lord. Everybody clap your hands.
My name is John Hensley.
Get down, get happy.
Get happy with Jesus.
I don't even know why the hell this is on here, but it's so fucking hilarious. I'm just going to go ahead and read it anyway. You actually put this together, by the way, just so everybody knows this was on your list of things to talk about.
Yeah, I'm the popper and the showstopper.
There's a movie called Chaw, which is a giant pig film from South Korea.
Hell yeah. Chaw!
It's been picked up recently by Magnolia Pictures and will be released through the company's Magnet banner under the moniker Chaws.
I've got to have Chaw. I've got to have it.
Says it's described as a monster movie about a giant vicious pig.
Called Chaw. Like, I figured it would be about some sort of toxic tobacco or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's Chaw.
It says, the director says, if Jaws was looking to branch out to dry land, without a doubt he'd want to be Chaws.
I just put funny because it's funnier than fuck. We gotta see Chaws, Aaron.
I've got Pig Hunt, though, from the Fangoria line. We're going to be up to our assholes in killer pig movies soon.
That's true. But I think that is it as far as the news. We don't have any DVDs released this week. I guess you'll talk about them next week.
Put them yeah, buddy, I'll talk about that shit.
Opening nationally, Uncle Bill, Devil, which is directed by John Doodle, the guy that did Quarantine and the Poughkeepsie Tapes, which is still not come out three and a half, four years later. This is a movie also produced by M. Night Shyamalan, if his name means anything nowadays. I don't think it does.
No, it means to me now. Don't go and see that movie.
Yeah. Also, we got two conventions this weekend, Uncle Bill, and they're actually not even that far from one another.
Oh, my God.
First one, Monster Mania in Hunt Valley, Maryland. Just an insane lineup. I mean, you got a complete, pretty much a complete Dream Warriors reunion, Return of Living Dead reunion. It's Melanie Kinneman's very first convention from Friday Five. Melinda Clark is also going to be, I'll sop her up like a biscuit. I'm still thinking about Melinda Clark.
You going to be okay?
No. That, here, Melinda Clark, okay, and I don't think Return of the Living Dead 3 is a bad movie. And we haven't really talked about that movie, hardly any on here on the show. But her titties alone make that a great movie. That's the only thing I give a fuck about, because I know she's in it.
Yeah.
She is completely nude.
That movie is all about her, really. There's nothing else about that movie I even remember.
She is, and she still is. But back then, too, she was, like, really young, like 19, 20 years old, something like that.
She was too good for horror films, though, for a while.
Yeah, back when she actually had a job. Now she didn't have a job. So
you remember that?
Yeah, she was on the OC, that stupid fucking show. That's all right. I'll welcome her back with open arms as long as I can grab that ass and her tits.
She's going to come back to open arms.
Yeah. Also, Linda Blair, Ted White, and more, and Horror Realm, which is a show that our good buddy Tim Gross helps out with.
What are they doing putting that show on right at the same time as Monster Mania?
I think they had the date before Monster Mania. But I'm not for sure. That's in Pittsburgh, which is not too far from, that's pretty close.
That's a bad idea.
That's not, I don't know. But they got a good lineup as well. Basket Case reunion, including Frank Henenlotter. A huge Night of the Living Dead reunion, which I think the Autopsy of the Dead people put that together because it has a lot of those extras that were. And I don't want to put down Horror Realm at all because I think that they actually have a really good lineup. Actually kicks the mortal fuck out of Cinema Wastelands lineup, which I'm glad to say. It does. You know it does.
I haven't seen it. I don't know what the lineup is this year.
Oh, H.G. Lewis for the fucking 100th time. And the only good guest that Cinema Wasteland has is Jim Van Baber.
Oh, yeah, that is right.
But Basket Case Reunion, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Reunions, and, a lot of people from Romero's Dead movie, so it's a pretty cool lineup. But that is it. That is all. So we're going to take a break, and I believe it's time to get sleepy. Get sleepy with it. Here on Deadbed.
Dadcast.
You know what, Uncle Bill?
Shut your fucking mouth right now.
No. I want to talk about Fast Custom Shirts.
Holy shit. Well, let's talk about it.
FastCustomShirts.com provides some of the best horror t-shirts I have ever fucking seen.
I don't think that you can really fully appreciate how awesome the t-shirts are over at FastCustomShirts.com until you go over to FastCustomShirts.com and look for yourself.
Yeah. The Hitman T-Shirt Joe. The highest quality of shirts that I've actually designed some of them, Uncle Bill. He actually lets the fans design some of the shirts for his site. Who else does that? Who else?
Nobody I know of. But when he's not busy playing with Carmen Opsy, he's busy cranking out some of the most high quality fucking shirts that you're going to find this side of any other damn whore t-shirt maker.
Yeah. So check him out. FastCustomShirts.com. The best there is.
The best there was.
And the best there ever will be.
It's a boot respect.
Howdy, folks, and welcome back to Deadbit Radio. Creepy Kentuckian here.
And I'm Uncle Bill.
And we're here with the legendary DVD producer of the millennium. He is. He won the award, the Pity Awards last year. Michael Slipcase Felcher. How's it going?
It's going well, Gus. How are you?
I'm doing luscious. Good.
We're not Arsenio in L.A., though. Just want everybody know.
No, that's good. That's good.
Or Oprah in Chicago.
Would that we could all be Oprah.
I want some Oprah bucks. That's all I want.
Did you hear about Oprah actually giving away, like, everyone in her audience, like, a trip to Australia or something? Like, that is the latest thing.
Yeah, she does that, you know. But, quite frankly, I'd just rather have the cash.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Since we've last met or talked on the radio show, you have been working on a lot of the stuff for Shout Factory, which has since come out. I think most of it's already out. The Roger.
With the exception of two of them. Yeah, all the other ones have hit so far. Yeah.
Yeah, and that has really taken up the majority of your time, I guess, for the releases this year.
Well, don't forget about the big one though, which would have been the documentary on Survival of the Dead too. I know that was one that was a big.
Was a big one. Yeah, that was that one and the Galaxy of Terror were the two big ones this year.
Cool. Yeah, we actually haven't seen the Diary of the Dead documentary yet, but we will.
Survival of the Dead, buddy. Survival of the Dead. Get your shit together.
I haven't seen the Diary of the Dead one either.
That's true.
Or the Survival of the Dead one. But we will check. I definitely want to check out the Survival of the Dead one, though, just because I heard like it's something completely different.
Yeah, it is. It's very different. I mean, I host it. It's kind of an informal sort of journal during the making of the movie. It goes from the first day all the way to the premiere in Toronto, and I'm very proud of it. It's probably my favorite one I've done in quite some time, and it was, it's one that I'm, you know, getting a lot of good reviews on. People have been really enjoying it, and I hope that you guys watch it. You know, and if you don't like it, well then, buddy, fuck you. I don't, you know,
buddy.
No, we'll definitely watch it. I'm gonna buy it just for the documentary, honestly.
There's no
well, I appreciate it.
Believe it or not, though, we were at the Walmart in Prestonsburg, and the Blu-ray was gone, like, the first day.
Yeah, it was sold out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, it's been selling well from what I understand, which is great. That's good to know, so.
But, yeah, moving past that, though, I know that you formed a lethal alliance, if you will, with Bill Lustig recently, working on a lot of those titles, too, right?
Yeah, I have been doing a couple things for Bill, which has been really cool because I hadn't, up until earlier this year, I don't think I'd spoken to Bill in quite a few years because, you know, he used to be the DVD producer over at Anchor Bay, during the first couple of years when I was there. And then he went off on his own to Blue Underground. And I think last time I, until this year, last time I'd seen him would have been the Rue Morgue convention, I think in 04. And then it was just kind of a, circumstances that brought us back together again, and, I've ended up, now I'm on my third project for him, and, it's gonna be hopefully interesting to see some, you know, getting to work on some very different kind of stuff, which is great. I'm really enjoying the opportunity, and the one that's coming out first is, Maniac, the Blu-ray of Maniac.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I don't know if you've seen, you probably haven't seen the remastered version of the film yet, have you, or have you?
I saw a work in progress. I have not seen the final color-corrected, final master of it.
Yeah.
But I was given an HD transfer to work with, for the clips and everything, and it does look really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is one that would probably surprise me, because just the, over the years, it's just been a, watching the movie, it's just really a gritty, you wouldn't think that it would be one that would work well.
You know, it was shot, you know, very cheaply, and it was shot on 16mm, so it's a film that's going to definitely have a little grain and a definite rough around the edges feel to it. But, you know, the funny thing I've always found about Maniac is that it's a very good-looking film for what it is.
Uh-huh.
They did actually spend a lot of time and care. There's a lot of passion that went into that movie, and it really shows in the final product, and also the a lot of the special features, like the one great documentary that's on there that will still be on there that was on the previous DVD was the Joe Spinell story that David Gregory did, which is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen on a DVD. And, you know, so it's just, I think it holds up really well, and I think Blu-ray is going to be very beneficial. I think you're going to get kind of like an Evil Dead situation or a Texas Chainsaw Massacre where you wouldn't think it would be better, but it actually is, and it's still going to have that grindhouse feel to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is definitely, I've noticed, like, and I think overall, Blue Underground has gotten a pretty bad rap when it comes to the train. I mean, I always, aside from maybe a couple, I felt that their Blu-rays are among the best as far as remasters.
Well, their Blu-rays are great. No, their Blu-rays are great. There were, I do remember hearing some grumblings about, on some of their previous DVDs, some edge enhancement that was used that kind of wasn't necessary and stuff. I mean, I don't have a lot of their earlier DVDs, so I couldn't really attest to that, but I do remember hearing some criticism of that. But as far as all the Blu-rays I've seen a lot of them from them, they're all pretty damn good. I mean, they're really, they were doing it right pretty much from the get-go.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, like, I've seen both versions of City of the Living Dead now, the Arrow video one from the UK and the one that Blue Underground did. And the Blue Underground version, picture-wise, in the actual movie, looks a ton better, I think. Like, I thought their transfer.
Yeah, I don't have the Arrow one from overseas, mostly because it's just, I don't want two different Blu-rays of the same damn movie, which I haven't watched that much of. And there's actually a lot of complications. I mean, it's funny because, you know, Arrow's doing a lot of Blu-rays that Bill's also doing here for the U.S. And, you know, so there's going to be different extras on certain ones, and but the transfers are different. I mean, it's, you know, it's just the way it goes. But, you know, I thought their City of the Living Dead disc was fantastic.
Right. And I know one that, really, that we keep asking you about. But, I don't know, there've been, I'm just gonna keep asking until there's a damn date for it, would be, Suspiria, which is another one I know Blue Underground had the rights to, but
they had it, but not anymore. The Weinstein Company has that title. They purchased it back when they were actively developing the remake, which may or may not still happen, I don't know. But, Blue Underground is not in charge of Suspiria anymore, unfortunately.
Shit.
Well,
that's kind of how I feel about it. Yeah, I mean, a proper Blu-ray of Suspiria would be mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So there.
I don't really see Weinstein Company releasing that anytime soon.
It's been hard because it's funny. I was just the other day, because I did some work for Weinstein Company a couple years ago with Diary of the Dead and the Night of the Living Dead documentary, and the people I worked with are all gone now. Their offices are all closed up, and they've consolidated pretty much everything that I can tell to New York, and they're doing business through a completely different channel. I don't even know how to get a hold of anybody over there anymore.
Yeah.
So God only knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's happening more and more with movie studios. They just sort of, like, come and go, you know, in a lot of ways. Like, I mean, Weinstein is still sort of around, but, I mean, it's not nothing like, you know, they were releasing.
Well, they've scaled back. Yeah, they've scaled back. But they're still out there doing stuff. I mean, I think they got into it, like, whole hog and just went crazy. And then, you know, not everything panned out the way they wanted to. And this is not unique to them. This happens with a lot of companies. They have to pull back their resources and consolidate a little bit. But they're still out there. I mean, they just acquired some movies up in Toronto, I think, and they're still releasing Blu-rays, and, you know, they're still kicking, but it's not what it was even a couple of years ago. It's different. You know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is way different. Like, even the Lionsgate stuff back, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when they were releasing, like, 10 horror titles a week, it seems like. And now it's
they
just
well, I think are, even they, yeah, I think even they figured out very quickly that you can't release Motorhome Massacre.
Well, they still like you know, they've every, got like they got 6 or 7 movie. Titles coming out for Halloween though. I mean, they're still
yeah,
they
but
still
I mean,
got
you
titles.
Know how you know how it was when they were releasing the direct to DVD independent movies
oh,
and
yeah.
stuff like
yeah,
that.
All
and
that shit was awful though. That was the problem with that.
Well, I mean, it just seems like a lot, you know.
Well,
it's like,
always gonna be, yeah, but a lot they've kind of. I think they're getting a little bit more selective because the market just really can't support every single damn thing now.
No.
You know, so it's, which is probably a good thing, you know.
Yeah, I don't need to see like movies like Amusement. I know they released that one, which was the killer theme
park.
Oh,
yeah, that one. Yeah, I remember hearing about it. I never did see that one.
I didn't see that one.
Anyway, yeah. You said though that, you were working on 3 titles with them. What are the other 2 titles? Are you at liberty to say?
Am I at liberty to say? Well, one of them I can't really talk about yet because if I say anything, it's preemptive and I don't want Bill to be pissed at me for breaking the news on it. But I will say this. I will say this. The title that I'm working on is probably one of the most highly requested Euro horror titles to be put onto Blu-ray. So it's probably going to be one that everyone's going to want to buy. And the other one I can go ahead and mention, because he's already mentioned, is I'm working on some stuff for Dario Argento's Inferno.
I know Steve just made his penis do a little dance. That's like his favorite. I don't mind Inferno, but that's like one of his favorites. So.
Well, just for the opening scene, though, that's an amazing scene.
Yeah, it's a well-made movie, no doubt.
Well, that's a movie for me that has... Overall, it doesn't quite gel together for me, but there are scenes in that that are amongst the best things that he's ever done. I mean, that underwater scene is just magnificent, and there's actually a scene in that movie that I've always, that was actually influenced a short film that I did back in high school. It's a murder sequence that happens in an apartment with, this classical piece playing on a stereo, but the power keeps shutting on and off, and so the music keeps coming back on and blaring really suddenly. It's very, very shocking, and I always thought that was a really, really tense sequence, and, you know, again, but then there's other scenes that don't really... Then there's that really weird moment where the guy drowns the cats, and then the rats start to eat him, and then the butcher runs across, you think, to save him, and then just ends up hacking the shit out of the guy. And I always thought that was really weird. What the hell just happened here? It's a funny movie, and it's very brilliantly designed, but it's also, as a whole, I always had issues with it, but the Blu-ray is going to look really, really nice.
Yeah.
I'm doing editing. There's going to be 2 new featurettes on that one. I won't say who with because that's up for Bill to announce, but the 2 people who were not on the previous releases of it, so...
And really, Argento is one of those directors that his style is just perfect for high def. I mean, in
oh yeah,
almost
especially
all
something like Inferno with all the crazy colors and the you know, just the immense depth of field that some of his shots have.
Because
there's like one shot I remember where she's one of the actresses is underground and almost like it almost feels like a witch's kitchen or something, like a coven or. I don't know what the hell it is. It's like an underground lair, and they come across this guy, and there's these bubbling pots, and there's a long shot where you can see all the entire set, and there's just so much detail in there in the new high-def version that you just never got to see before, because it's just layers upon layers upon layers of stuff, and it's going to be really interesting. I know the Arrow has just released their version, or is about to release their version, but I was not involved with that one. I'm just doing the Blue Underground version, so. Mm-hmm. But, there'll be an announcement, I'm sure, with all that stuff pretty soon. But Maniac is the one that is all the way completed and done, and I did 4 featurettes for that one. I ended up doing 4. I didn't think we'd do 4, but there was a lot of different stories to tell on that one.
Now, getting back, because Lustig and yourself also sort of started, I guess, at Anchor Bay when it comes to releasing, you know, these movies. Are you friendly with anybody left over that Anchor Bay? How is the company now as opposed to a few years ago? I mean,
Before, actually, it's interesting. Before you guys called, for those of you who don't know, I had to push this call back a little bit because I was actually over with a friend at Anchor Bay having a little discussion about some stuff and just kind of chatting and, you know, seeing what was going on over there. I mean, they've moved to a new office since the last time I worked there, and, you know, they're owned by Starz now, and they're just focusing on different product. I mean, most of the cult films are gone from their catalog these days, but there's still some great people that work over there. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Evil Dead Blu-ray or not, but it's fantastic.
Yep, we reviewed that one a couple
really,
weeks ago.
Really, really, really great. And that was a new transfer they did for this release specifically. So, I mean, they're still doing good work, and they're doing theatricals. They're doing a lot of cable product now. It's just a different company. It isn't what it was 5 years ago, which, you know, you become successful enough, sometimes you become something that you didn't originally set out to be. But, you know, I have nothing still but good feelings about the place, and it's just... evolution has taken its course with the focus of the company.
We talk about this from time to time on the show, and it's kind of weird, but in a way, I'm sort of nostalgic over that era of in 2000, 2001, Anchor Bay.
Oh, sure, that's when I joined the company. Yeah.
Just the stuff. Yeah, I mean, every week there was something awesome coming out from Anchor Bay, and it was like a lot of these movies I'd never seen before. You know, I'd heard about and never got the chance to see.
Well, yeah, and it was, I mean, that was during a time where none of these titles had been out on DVD before. You know, there weren't 15 versions of Evil Dead yet at that point. And, you know, it was, and there was all these Eurocult titles, and that was when Lustig was still with the company, and we were doing just amazing stuff. I mean, that was really a great, you know, like between 2000 and 2003 was just an amazing time to be there. I would even go into 2004.
Yeah, I mean, 2004 was the big Dawn of the Dead Ultimate Edition. And
yeah, that was like the big last one that we did. I mean, it was just, but it was, yeah, I mean, it was an amazing time to be there, and it does feel like a bygone era already. But it was back in the days where I would get emails from people, you know, saying that they would buy titles that they never heard of just because they saw the logo on the spine.
Mm-hmm. I think we did that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I would go in like a pawn shop. And that's why I love that logo so much, is it just stuck out there at the bottom. It was like a white square, pretty much, you know.
Yeah, no, it was. I always thought it was a terrible logo, personally, because it was like, oh, it doesn't fit in, it doesn't blend, it just kind of looks like a sticker that's been stuck on there. But it did call itself out, and a lot of people just went by, well, it's Anchor Bay, so it might be interesting, and they got to see films that they never would have thought to check out before. And I always really took a great sense of pride in that, and it's not that way anymore. You know, and that's not, I'm not knocking the new incarnation of Anchor Bay for that. That's not their fault. It's just the way things go sometimes. It couldn't stay a cult company forever, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and times are different now. I mean, look at a Best Buy back then and the shit
that
they
carry everything.
Yeah, compared to now, which the horror section.
You could go in there and
go ahead.
You could go in there and find Anguish.
Yeah.
You know, on the shelves, or House by the Cemetery, or, you know, you could find that kind of stuff. Now they don't really do that unless the movie's made some money theatrically, or it's a title that they have a history with. But, you know, I have a lot of really positive memories of that time. But when I left, it was a good time to leave, because it was really before the company really, the writing was already on the wall when I left there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just kind of a good time for me to have left and done my own thing.
Yeah, I think
at the time it was painful, because it was, you know, it was such a good home for me. But, you know, now it's the company that, I can't imagine that I would be with the company now still if that hadn't happened.
Right.
Yeah, well, moving on a little bit, though, you also are working on a title that I know a lot of people have, it's kind of become a cult classic. A lot of people talk about this title just for the simple fact that it has Tracy Lords in it. And I think that you'd mentioned that it is like her first starring vehicle post her porn career, which of course was infamous because she was underage at the time of her porn career. But this one is Not of This Earth. Is that the one you're working on too?
Yeah, Not of This Earth. It was a remake of a 1950s Roger Corman. Roger Corman made a deal with Jim Wynorski, the director, and it was something like a bet. You know, he said he filmed the original, I forget, in 20 days or something like that, and he bet Wynorski that he couldn't do it in less, and I think they did it in 12 days.
So you know it's quality. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The movie is a really charming little movie, and it's very, I mean, you can tell they had $8 to work with, and you can tell that it was a very, very quick production, but it's got a really, really nice bit of charm attached to it, and Tracy's actually very charming in it. You could really see that she was destined to really put the whole porn thing behind her, and, you know, I mean, it's been over 20 years since she did that movie now, and she had a lot of really interesting things to say about it, and she was very candid about it. You know, she said that it was the last time she did nudity was in that movie. Because she said after that, it was just like, okay, you know what, I think going forward, I don't think I should do the nudity anymore. I think if I'm going to try to get any kind of respect, I shouldn't, you know, I should try keeping my shirt on, she says. So she did that, and so the interview we got with her was really, really cool. And it's, I think people are really first of all, she still looks like $1 million.
Yeah, I mean, she was just in Zach and Miri, I think. That was like the last movie I can remember in. She looked good in that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she was great in that. It was funny because she kind of played up with her past in that movie.
Yeah.
And it's funny, Tracy Lords was one of three judges on the show Ultimate Film Fanatic.
Right.
Oh yeah,
That is right. That I was on,
so I met her technically on that show, and she gave me the thumbs up every time she judged me. She never voted against me on both shows that I did, so I always have been like Tracy Lords voted for me, you know. I've always been, and so I sent along a little note to the interviewer when they interviewed her out in L.A. I said, thank her for me. Just read this to her, and I was always curious because Jason Mewes was on the panel with her. And I said, was Jason Mewes hitting on you as much as it appeared that he was? And she said, yes, he was. And when I did Zach and Mary, I made him suffer for it.
I don't know,
so,
man.
So, like, I really appreciated her still remembering that. Yeah.
The shit, you know, they had Jason Mewes doing that movie. It didn't look like he was suffering too much.
No.
Looked like a pretty good gig to me.
No, it was. But it was funny. It was her interview I think fans are going to get a really big kick out of. And we also did a new commentary with her and Jim Wynorski as well that is very funny. So there's going to be the commentary with the two of them and the interview with Tracy. So I think fans will, and it's a new transfer.
And this
is an all-new transfer of Not of the Surf. So it's definitely a DVD worth picking up.
Of course, this is another one from Shout Factory as well, right?
Yep, it's one of the Roger Corman titles, yep.
Boy, Jim Wynorski, though, he's kind of like got through. He kind of is the next Roger Corman, isn't he? Like, he's got the reputation. I mean, he made a ton of low-budget movies really, really fast, kind of the same way.
Yeah, and he did a lot of them for Roger. Yeah. I mean, he did Chopping Mall and Transylvania Twist and The Haunting Umbrella and a whole slew of them. A lot of them he did for Roger, and a lot of them he's done on his own. But there's actually I can't remember the name of it, but there's a documentary coming out about him. And it's interesting. He has a pretty forceful way of working, and he can be very hard to get along with, apparently, according to some people. But people really still love him because he's very passionate about his work, and he knows what he wants. He knows he likes low-budget films with a lot of naked women running around. He's not ashamed to say that. That's what he likes to do. So, more power to him.
They have nothing wrong with that, baby.
No. I got no issues with that, and I don't think anybody else that's in the right mind does either.
Yeah.
I may be wrong, but didn't he direct Munchie?
He did, yeah.
I think so, or he did the second one. It's funny, because he steps in and does a lot of... Like, he didn't do Big Bad Mama, but he did Big Bad Mama 2. And I don't know if he did the first Deathstalker, but I think he did Deathstalker 2. And he did 976 Eagle 2. And,
oh, hell.
Yeah. So he's kind of stepped in and done a lot of sequels to a lot of other directors' works, including his own. So,
moving onward, are there any other, like, I know there's always the never-ending list of the same titles. People want to know about Curtains and Terrorvision and, of course, Blood Diner. There's always, like, a never-ending list
popcorn,
of titles.
Popcorn, if you will. Yeah. Everybody wants popcorn.
Popcorn's already been out, I believe.
It ain't out. It's not, you can't find it, though.
Well, popcorn was interesting. It's funny, I had a conversation with someone about popcorn not too long ago. Popcorn was out briefly from Elite on DVD, but it was a weird release. It almost felt like a bootleg because it was like, it was just a VHS cover that got reformatted for the DVD and there were no extras on it and it looked like it was just an old Video Master and it wasn't a very good release, but that release disappeared pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And unfortunately I've been trying to find out who has the rights because Sony, who put out the VHS, they don't have it anymore. And the problem is the person who would have been the perfect person to ask about the rights was Bob Clark.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. So I'm still trying to figure out where the hell that movie... Because it started off with one director, then he left the project, then someone else came in, and there's like 8 producers on the movie, and it's kind of a tangled web. Same with Curtains. That one's kind of buried in a couple different possible holes, and
yeah.
God only knows where.
Terrorvision's
with a studio,
yeah.
So that, you know, whenever they decide to bring that out, and God only knows. And Blood Diner, sadly, is on kind of an indefinite hold because Lionsgate kind of reconsidered on that for right now.
Right. Well, I've noticed they haven't come out with any more of the, what was it, the Legend?
The 80s collection?
Yeah,
the Lost Collection.
Lost Collection,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened with those. I don't know if some of those sold really well or not. I mean, I think Blood Diner would probably have been an ideal choice for...
I'm guessing they didn't do that well, though, because there's like, I think there's like a 4-pack for like $5 at Walmart.
Oh, really? Like Walmart. My Best Friend's Vampire and...
Yeah, Repossessed, I think, was another one. Slaughter
Repossessed
High.
And... what was it? Hiding Out or something? Or
yeah, Hiding Out
Hiding Out. I actually want to see again because I sort of remember that when I was a kid. But
shit.
So,
So I don't know. I Lionsgate. I mean, I'm still doing some work for them. There's some stuff coming up. Hopefully, I'll be able to announce soon that I'm working on with them.
What are the big titles? You mentioned the Lionsgate titles. What are they?
Oh, well, you got Blair Witch coming out.
Well, that's already out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. These are the movies that they've just released on Blu-ray and stuff. And then
they just did like High Tension.
Yeah.
Blair Witch and 2000 Maniacs and a couple others.
There's nothing new coming out though, right? Like that's not been released before.
I don't think any of that stuff was released on Blu-ray though.
I'm talking about
none of that was Blu-ray stuff. But yeah, there's another couple potential Blu-ray projects I'm working on with them that hopefully I'll be able to talk about maybe closer to the end of the year. But nothing right now, unfortunately.
This is the time
of year where I'm kind of ratcheting down and trying to build up work for next year. So it's always a time of transition. But, you know, that's to be expected.
It's almost Halloween, though, Felcher, and we probably won't do another one of these before Halloween. You got to give us some Halloween news of some sort, some kind of Halloween title.
Give us a scoop!
Well, I could just lie and make something up, but then that just comes back and bites me in the ass.
Go ahead and make some up.
The peanut butter solution, there you go.
Special Halloween edition.
Let it go with the peanut butter solution. It's not going to happen.
I think Don May wanted to... we were talking to Don May about it at Fright Night. He was wanting to get a hold of it, remaster it.
Yeah. What about a 25th anniversary edition of Soul Man?
I'm going to hang up now.
You remember Soul Man, don't you, with C. Thomas Howell?
Yeah, I remember Soul Man with C. Thomas Howell. And yes, I remember, blah, 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 blah. You know, the sad thing is that was actually a pretty good song title for us at Anchor Bay.
That is kind of sad.
You know, though, Don May, he wants to, he can do a 2K transfer of that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. We were just talking about that the other day. I really want to do a 2K of Soul Man. No.
How fucking awesome would that be, though? It'd be the most pristine Soul Man has ever looked.
Oh, that's another thing I can talk about. I am doing, we'll be finally finishing up, two featurettes for The Dorm That Dripped Blood for Synapse.
Oh, yeah, Pranks, a.k.a. Pranks, I guess. Yeah, that one's...
Yeah.
People have been waiting on that one for a long time.
Now, is that supposed to be out this year, or is that something in the future?
Early next year. Okay. They had a lot of restoration work to do on that movie, and it's going to look amazing. And it's uncut. I mean,
yeah.
Seriously, there's stuff no one has ever seen before. This isn't like there was some VHS floating around out there that had the uncut stuff. This stuff never made it to home video.
Right. Well, and from what I understand, this was actually taken from a film print, right? It wasn't, they didn't have like a negative.
Actually, no. This was taken from a, I think it was an answer print, which is not technical. I mean, it's a little bit complicated. But I think it was either an answer print or an internegative. I can't remember what it is. But it was not just a theatrical print.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a used theatrical print. Because this one they got, and Don would be better at describing this, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but what they had access to actually had the Death Dorm title on it.
Ooh.
Before it became known as Prank or The Dorm That Dripped Blood. So this is, like I said, it's a version of the film no one has ever seen before.
That would almost be like seeing the Fall Break version of Mutilator before they changed it to the Mutilator.
Fall Break.
Can you believe that, though? Like, that's so fucking hilarious. That was the name of a horror movie. Fall Break.
I know. It sounds like someone describing an accident. He, Fall Break, leg, hurts bad.
Something Lou Ferrigno would say in the Hulk. Fall Break.
Yeah, arg. You know, I don't know. I think the Mutilator's a better title. If nothing else, it certainly makes you go, ooh, Mutilator.
know. Yeah, that's one that Code Red was supposed to release.
Don't even get me started on
one
that.
One of the many Code Red titles.
Yeah.
Have you seen the big uproar, whatever, about the Madman release? And
I have not seen the DVD, and I probably won't. But I have been seeing the rather considerable uproar over the new release, which I find it interesting, but since I'm not involved with it, I really don't have any comment on it.
Well, I'll comment on it for you. It fucking sucks. God. I mean, here's the thing, like, why is it that the one DVD we actually are featured in is the one where everybody's like, this is shit? Why couldn't we get the one like, oh God, it's killer?
Well, because, no, you guys are cursed and you ruin everything you
It's touch. True. It's
all
really
our
true.
Fault. It's all our fault. Yeah.
It's completely, you fuck everything up. I mean, that's
well,
just,
I honestly think, like, Code Red, it's almost expected from Code Red that
it really is that
something's
going to
be fucked up with it. I mean, I don't want to,
those
guys, I mean, they've been nice to us over the years. I'm not going to really say anything mm-hmm. negative about them in particular, but it just really seemed like they rushed this release, and it's not even technically the 30th anniversary of the movie until
no.
next year. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know whose fault
it was.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I've gone by is the screenshots that I've seen, and there are some pretty striking differences between it. But again, I wasn't involved with the release. I don't know what the story is, and I don't have the DVD to actually really even say, you know. And I don't want to comment on it. But yeah, you know, I'm surprised. I'm surprised by some of the changes and some of the differences too, and sorry guys, but you're cursed. You screwed everything up.
Story.
Well,
of
the funny
lives,
thing,
yeah.
From what I understand too, the DVD is only going to be pressed like once, so there's only going to be like 1,000 of them or something. So it's going to be like nobody's going to be able to get it by the end of the year, probably. So.
Whatever, I don't know why they're doing that, but that's their call. Whatever.
Look, I'm on my.
I don't know those guys.
Whatever,
so
dude.
Okay, so other than the titles we mentioned, is there anything else that you're working on currently, or that you think that you will be working on soon that you can tell us about?
Well, fans can look forward to also a Jill Whitlow interview on Twice Dead. That's another Roger Corman. That's going to be on a double feature with The Evil that Shout Factory is bringing out. But we did an interview with Jill, and that's on there. And then, like I said, there's Not of This Earth, there's Maniac. I think that's all that's left for this year, because I've already seen, you know, Survival's out, Galaxy's out. It's funny, you guys reviewed one of my titles just a couple weeks ago, but I don't think you realized I did it or not.
Which one?
Johnny Handsome.
No, we had no idea.
I didn't. I really didn't.
Yeah, I did the three feature. That was a Lionsgate thing, and they called me up to do the three featurettes on Johnny Handsome, so I did that one.
Well, that was one that was kind of released sort of silently. Like, there was nothing.
Yeah,
I don't even know if we...
Well, they brought it out. They were doing, like, an Expendables promotion.
Yeah.
Where any film in their catalog they had that had someone from the Expendables in it, they just kind of... And I think that was what kind of spurred that release to happen with Mickey Rourke's kind of, you know, comeback and... but no, it was a fun project to work. I like that movie. I think it's a really underrated little flick.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before. I'd actually never heard of it.
A lot of people never did. It came out at a weird time because it was right when Mickey Rourke's career was starting to go south. After that, he quit acting like very, you know, shortly after that and went into boxing. So it didn't really do anything, but it has an amazing cast. Yeah. And it's one I would really hope that people would go check out. It's a really good film noir, and Mickey Rourke is great in it. Lance Henriksen is just fantastic in it. And
I'm thinking, though, that we need a Blu-ray of Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Which is the film I think that Mickey Rourke hates more than any other film he's ever done.
Aw, the movie's awesome.
Yeah, which I don't know why. I like Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Yeah,
I've never understood why that movie. That was like the one that made him want to quit acting. Apparently, was Harley Davidson.
I blame Don Johnson for that. I really do. I blame it all on Don Johnson.
Yeah,
blame it on Don Johnson. Yeah, it's all Don Johnson's fault.
But I think that when it comes to Johnny Handsome and that stuff, I was just assuming that all that was like archive extras, like, because I know we're reviewing Lock Up this week, which was another one that was a part of that batch of releases,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have any new special features for that I saw. I think it was just all like making of stuff that they did when the movie came out.
Well, it was it was difficult because on Johnny Handsome, like Walter Hill never does that stuff, so he was out. Mickey Rourke, of course, that wasn't going to happen. None of the other cast members were really available. Lance was going to do it, but he had to go do a movie overseas, so he couldn't do it. So we ended up getting the screenwriter, the head stuntman, who was also the second unit director, and we also got the guy to the makeup. So there's three new interviews, three different perspectives on the making of the movie, and I was really happy with what we got. But that was difficult because all the major players were kind of unavailable. On Lockup, it's probably even more difficult for whoever worked on that because the director's dead, and Stallone hardly ever does that with Rocky or Rambo.
Hey, how about Sonny Landham?
Yeah, that would have been good. You know what? That would have been fun.
Fuck yeah, that would have been killer. They should have just had like a whole interview segment with Sonny Landham talking about the movie.
Well, hello there, Michael. It's good to see you.
Thank you for coming down here to Ashland and talking to me.
I'll do this movie Lockup with Sylvester Stallone, where we all had big pecs. I like Lockup. Lockup's a good movie.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like, I hadn't seen it in a few years. I was actually surprised how well it held up. It's actually not too bad.
Well, the director of that, John Flynn, he was really good. He did Rolling Thunder, and he had a long history in sort of exploitation, kind of B-movie action pictures. He was really good.
Yeah, and I think...
But unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago. It would have been great to get him on some of this stuff, because he was kind of unheralded, except from people like Quentin Tarantino, who really liked him.
Well, Bill Conti also did the score in that. You could definitely tell in certain scenes, too, in Lock Up, so...
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was one of Stallone's better pictures from the late 80s, because there was that period there, he was doing stuff that was like, oh, dear God. You know, I mean, really, Stopping My Mom, well, she was like in the late... early 90s, and like after, but like before Lockup, he had done like Over the Top, and you know, just like
Oscar. Well, when did he do Oscar? Because that was when it was like all over.
The movie that really kick-started his career back was Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
No, it was funny. The one he did right before that was really good, Demolition Man. I really liked
that. Yeah, Demolition Man is not too bad.
Yeah, but then he did Judge Dredd, and it was just like, oh, we're done.
Yep.
You know. Judge Dredd.
And the thing is, I love watching Judge Dredd because it's funny. It's supposed to be a comic book movie. It's a terrible adaptation of the comic because the whole thing becomes a Stallone picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Judge Dredd never takes off his helmet. He's never supposed to take off his helmet. Yet Stallone barely has a helmet on at any point during the picture.
Well,
you know, you can't understand a word the man says, and it's just like, you know, it's a really weird movie, a really weird movie.
It just, it seems like, though, around that time period, like 93, 94, 95, around those years, there were all kinds of just awful fucking action movies like that, though. Like, Last Action Hero was another one, and they had the Street Fighter.
Yeah, Last Action Hero, that suffered for a couple of reasons. One, I still think it was a clever idea, a very interesting idea, and I really applaud them for trying something very, very different. But it just didn't work. I don't know what it is about that movie, but it feels really forced, and it's just very plodding and very kind of phony. It just doesn't. But the problem with Last Action Hero is it came out 2 weeks or a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks after Jurassic Park. I don't care how good your movie is. After Jurassic Park, no one was going to see
it. I actually remember like taking a bet with my dad when those two movies were coming out. We were like taking a bet which one would be more successful, because that was like Arnold's first movie after T2, I think, wasn't it? Last Action Hero.
It was, yeah.
Never bet against Spielberg.
Yeah, but he was like huge at that period of time. Like, you couldn't do any wrong right after T2. And then like Jurassic Park was getting ready to come out, and there was a big buzz over that. And I was like, I was the one saying Last Action Hero, and he was like Jurassic Park. He just fucking died laughing when we went to see those two movies, because I think Last Action Hero after the first week, like, bombed. Like, it didn't do anything.
Oh, it didn't, it didn't even open that well, because literally Jurassic Park was such a game changer. It just, everything that, any film that was even similar to it or went to the same audience that opened in, like, the month after it just got laid to waste.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you were going back to see Jurassic Park 3, 4, 5 fucking times. And Last Action Hero just went, and he's gone. What happened? The movie's gone now! it was all over. And Super Mario Brothers, remember that piece of shit?
John Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins, I think. Yeah.
Oh, God, what a misbegotten pile of shit that was.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Like I was saying, there was a lot around that time period, just awful. They actually made a fucking Jerky Boys movie.
Back
around that time, too. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And what was weird, it was a weird time because the 80s was like the big action stars, the Stallones and the Schwarzeneggers. But when the 90s came around, it started shifting away from those kind of films. So you started seeing them getting stuck into superhero movies and films where they were really out of place, like Stallone and Judge Dredd or Schwarzenegger and Batman and Robin. It was just like, no, this doesn't work, because you put them in those kind of movies, they bend the whole film around them. You know, it becomes Stallone as Judge Dredd, not Judge Dredd. Mm-hmm. So it just didn't work, and it was a really weird time where they were kind of transitioning. The action films that were being made were becoming different, and Stallone and Schwarzenegger didn't really work in those films anymore.
I was trying to think, though, like, something happened around that time that just all those guys were just in horrible fucking movies. All those action stars. Like, I remember going to see Van Damme in Sudden Death, which was hockey movie.
He was also in Double Team with the...
Yeah, well, that was after Sudden Death, I think. Like, those two films put together, like, that was it for him. And then you had Seagal when he did, like, what was it, Fire Down Below? Did he do that?
Fire Down Below is not that bad.
The two that he did...
Well, the Fire Down Below, that was the diarrhea movie, right?
What's the diarrhea? I don't know. What's the story behind that?
Oh, that's what I meant. The Fire Down... It's Fire Down Below.
Oh.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, the one that kills Skull, as far as I was concerned, was the one he did right after Under Siege, when he was at the height of his power, where he directed the movie On Deadly Ground.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah, I do remember that.
Which one. He's at one with nature. He's trying to protect nature.
Was that Michael Caine?
Nature is to like blow. Yeah, you know, with Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Where his solution to protecting nature and stopping the evil oil company is to kill as many people as possible. And it's one of those movies where you're like, wow, this could only be made by a star at the height of his power doing the most ridiculous thing at the worst possible time. And it was just, he never really recovered from that.
Well, one guy's career that pretty much stayed hot the whole time, though, especially in the 90s, I would say would be Chuck Norris. Remember Top Dog.
Oh, Chuck Norris.
Yeah, he was hot, like, all through the night.
Top Dog was an interesting movie, though, because the dog actually out-acted Chuck in Top Dog.
That's it true. Doesn't take much to out-act Chuck Norris. I mean, I enjoy several of his movies, but let's not kid ourselves. Yeah, Chuck Norris is not exactly a master thespian, and he never really was.
Something else, though, I wanted to mention to you, because I know you're a fan of the Star Wars movies, and not too long ago, George Lucas announced that he was going to release all of the Star Wars films on Blu-ray next year, I think in the fall of next year. But, of course, is going to release the special editions of the original Star Wars movies, and when asked why the original theatrical versions, he gave some sort of excuse like they didn't have the money or the funds to do it. I don't know what you thought about that. That whole thing.
It's the same dodge he's been using for years. Well, they don't exist anymore. The elements are not there. It's like, bullshit. I mean, you own all that stuff and you know where it is. Don't tell me that it's a, he wants to promote the special editions as being the true version. You know, that's his thing. And you know what? At this point, I've said a lot about Star Wars on various forums and done a couple of podcasts and other places about it. And I'm at the point right now where it's just like, I'm kind of over it. I'm just like, you know what? I don't really care that much about Star Wars anymore. And, it's, you know, the prequels were terrible and I did not like them very much. And I didn't like some of the changes he made to the original trilogy were fine, but others were, I thought, really unnecessary, and some of them were really just stupid. But how much longer? You can't go around bitching and moaning about this stuff. You know, he didn't rape my childhood. You know, he didn't destroy my memories forever or anything like that. You know, let's all calm down a little bit. But at the end of the day, I'll probably get the films when they come out on Blu-ray. I'm sure I will. But, you know, I'll probably watch the first three and then not bother with the prequels again because I really don't have any desire to revisit those.
Well, I think it would be an interesting experience, though, especially if they don't really go back and update anything on the prequels, just to see how awful, like, the CG and all that shit will look in HD.
Well, the CG, I'll give those films actually a lot of credit in the technical department. The CG was excellent. I mean, the special effects in those three films actually still hold up very, very well.
Oh, I think I think he's talking about, though, the CG that he put into the original.
Well, I'm actually talking about, like, the CG, Yoda, and just the
well,
like,
they're actually, from what I hear, they're doing some change. They are updating. I mean, like, the Yoda puppet that they used in Phantom Menace is going to be replaced by a CGI Yoda, which is a good thing, because the Yoda puppet they used in Phantom Menace looked like shit. It was really bad. So it was just like, you know, but that means I have to watch Phantom Menace again, and I don't know if I want to do that.
No, it's not worth it.
You know, and I know I will never watch Attack of the Clones again, even if someone put a fucking gun to my head. You know, so it's just, you know, but at the same time, I don't go around bitching and wondering about the Star Wars movies that much anymore just because it's like, it's over, it's done, they're finished.
I mean, we never really, that's the interesting thing, like, we never really talk about Star Wars, but we're both kind of fans of the series. And it's just, like, the thing that I don't like about it is, 20 years from now, when you would have younger kids just now getting into sci-fi and stuff like that, they won't have a reference to go back and watch the original version of the movie. And it's
right.
Almost like that original version won't exist. You know,
yeah, and I do wish that he would just preserve the original versions of the trilogy just for historical sake, because those are the ones that made the history. I mean, you know, there was that version of E.T. that was different. Spielberg, you know, took the guns out of the government's hand to put walkie-talkies in, and he added a few CG shots of E.T. that weren't there before. But, you know, and I wasn't really crazy about that, and I thought that was kind of silly. But he didn't get rid of the original version. He put it out side by side with the other one. Because he said he felt the same way that most people do. It's like, well, I don't want to erase history. I would just like to have this other version out there that I think reflects the film more accurately for me now, but that doesn't discredit what I did back then. And that's the problem with the Star Wars films to some degree. It's like, well, they're not really the films that you saw back then. They've been kind of tweaked, but that's his right to do it if he wants. I mean, I'm not going to take that away from him, but I do wish he would just put them out there. I don't need any extras on them. Just put out nice HD transfers of them just so we have them. Just so we, you know, if that's what we want to watch, that's what we want to watch. But again, I used to get really worked up about it, but now it's just kind of like, you got to understand, man, Star Wars was my generation, you know. I mean, that was when I, you know, Indiana Jones and Star Wars. And for me, it was more Indiana Jones because I love Raiders of the Lost Ark so much. But Star Wars was just so big. I had all the action figures. I went to all the films. I bought all the stuff. I was just, it really was a part of me growing up. And so when Phantom Menace came along, I mean, I waited 10 hours to buy the fucking tickets overnight. Damn. I was one of those people. And then I was there 10 hours before the midnight show, standing in line with everybody else, playing Star Wars Monopoly in the parking lot with other people. I mean, really, it was like an event. No, I'm saying it was like an event. It was like a real important social event, and I loved it. Then we saw the movie, and everything began to kind of fall apart. Because
yeah, that's sad, but that's true, yeah.
You know, and halfway through Attack of the Clones, I remember sitting there halfway through Attack of the Clones going, I think I'm done with Star Wars. I can't stand this shit. And by the, you know, to go from 10 hours in line to after Revenge of the Sith was over, literally walking up out of the theater going, well, at least that's over with. It's like, that does tell me something, that it's like something just didn't click for me, but whatever. You know, it's been 5 years since Revenge of the Sith, and I used to be able to talk for hours about, oh, fuck the Star Wars and goddamn motherfucking and shit. Now it's just like, well, let it go. It's over. It's done with. Move on to something else.
We got
to
move on, though, and talk about him fucking with Howard the Duck, because that's really upset me.
You know what? That's one I wish he would fuck with.
You just burn it. How about that?
Yeah,
just replace the duck. Put a CGI duck in there. And you know, just he could do so much better with that now. It's like, that's the thing I don't get. We get the original version of Howard the Duck untouched.
Yeah, but that's his vision. He wants that out.
Which I've still yet to see in the $5 bin. I'm surprised.
You know, they aired it on TV maybe about a year ago or a year and a half ago, and I was like, oh, man, I haven't seen this since I saw it in the theater. And I got 20 minutes into it. It's like, oh, my God, I had forgotten how wretchedly piss-poor awful this thing is. I mean, it was just like, wow, this is shitty.
Yeah.
Going
back to the thing with Lucas, though, I mean, my only problem with it is the guy has made, and granted, I mean, the original films, there's no doubt, I enjoy all the original Star Wars movies, as do millions and millions of other fans, but it's like you've made all this money off of these fans that have supported you over the years, and it would be nothing for you to be like, let's just get a team working on this. You know, get fucking Don May. I'm sure Don May would do it for free, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, he wouldn't do it for free, but he would do it.
Well,
I mean, the thing is,
yeah, I mean,
I think it really does have more to do with him really wanting people to embrace the special editions. I think he's really behind that idea, and I don't think he views it in the same way as, you know, other filmmakers or we do, in that he views it as his universe, his world that he's free to change and alter and revisit to his desire. I'm not going to argue that point. It's, you know, there's an argument to be made. And also, Lucas has been actually pretty cool about some other stuff, like fan films and people doing their own kind of Star Wars stuff. He's not one of those pricks that goes out there and sues anybody every time someone does a lightsaber in a movie or something. You know, he's actually encouraged a lot of the fan films. As long as they don't try and make money off of it, they can do whatever they want. And, you know, he's not the tyrant, but he has a sense of humor about himself. There's a lot of positive things to say about him. You know, as a director, I don't think he's a good director. I don't think he's a very good writer. But as a dreamer, as an imagineer, or as a kind of creator of a world and a universe, he's very, very talented. And as a businessman, let's face it, he's a fucking genius. So, you know, I used to say, I don't know if I ever met George Lucas if I shake his hand or kick him in the balls. truth is, these days I would shake his hand and just tell him, you know, I thought about kicking you in the balls, but I'm not going to.
I'm a dark dreamer, Aaron Fry.
I certainly am.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. Taking live call-ins, reading live fan questions on the Facebook page. If you guys aren't associated with Facebook yet, let me tell you, you're not a baller or a shot caller.
But who's not associated with Facebook? Jesus Christ, it gets more hits than Google.
I did actually find out that one of every 14 people on the planet have a Facebook page.
Exactly.
How insane is that? That's even counting like all the little bony fucking Indonesian children.
Oh my God. Like, what's wrong with you?
I'm just saying. Even some of them have Facebook pages. So
get a Facebook page, join the fucking century now.
Yeah. And search for deadpit.com fans. It's a growing Facebook fan page. We want to get over 1,000 followers by the end of the year. It'd be neat. So you can also post your questions on there. That's what I'm doing. So
post your questions right in on the message board.
I'm reading fan questions right now.
Call in immediately.
And we have quite a few on here that people have asked prior. And let's go ahead. What we'll do is we'll both read a different fan question, and then we'll take a phone call. That's how it'll work.
Go ahead and read it.
Okay.
Read it off Facebook.
First
page.
One is, we got one from Don Muggins. It says, being a lifelong war fan, have you ever seen a film as a kid that perhaps disappointed a younger version of yourself? Oh, we're talking like fucking Terminator here. Because the pacing was slow or the subtext was over your head, and now as an adult, you love. Upon re-release of Martin, I thought about it for the first time, and I was expecting it to be like a Dracula version of Day of the Dead. In the second and third viewing, it's replaced Night of the Living Dead as his favorite Romero film, Don Muggins.
There's two films I can think of like that, actually. One of them was definitely The Shining, where I watched it when I was younger. I thought it was like really, really boring and dull, and I watch it now, I think it's like a damn masterpiece. The other one, though, is oddly enough, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because I remember hearing like so much stuff about that film when I was a kid, and I was really into gore and stuff like that back then.
Yeah.
And then to go and watch the movie, I was just like, there's nothing about this movie at all that's gory, or there's nothing. I thought it was kind of boring. And now I think, I mean, you have to be at a certain age to appreciate the subtle nuances in a lot of these films, I think.
Well, there's another one too that popped into my head. Would be the first Friday the 13th movie, actually. Because as a kid, I had seen a lot of the sequels prior to the original movie. So I was expecting, of course, the typical Jason stalking teenagers. But over the years, I've learned to sort of appreciate the first Friday the 13th movie, and I sort of hold it a little higher as far as a quality horror film than the other ones for some reason.
So, okay, Newt138.
Newt!
He wants to know, or she wants to know, hey guys, what is y'all's thoughts on the recent announcement that Code Red DVD is closing down sometime next year?
We talked about that a little bit earlier. I don't particularly believe it. I don't think it'll happen. I think it's a ploy to get more people to buy their DVDs. Be like, hey, buy all of our shit. Because we're going to be gone soon, and, you know.
Could be. But even if it does, like, I think it's probably a good thing now, because they're really doing more harm than they are good, in my opinion, by releasing a lot of these titles, really shoddy releases, and rushing them out and all this stuff. So, and the ones they do get, they spend, like, a ton of time on. They never come out.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see. I know that even back, like, 2 years ago when we were talking to Bill Olson, we're closing, we're not going to be around much longer, and, you know. Anyway, we've got a phone call here.
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hey, this is Iron Trooper. What's going on?
Hey.
Oh, how are you, sir?
How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Pretty good. We're just off the chain. Of course, we didn't mention that we're actually talking about Stallone movies, or if you want to talk about Sonny Landham, it's always good, too.
I actually wanted to talk wrestling with you guys, if that's all right.
That's fine. Anything anybody wants to talk about, it's always the rules.
Well, I recently got the WrestleMania anthology with all the WrestleManias, and I went back and I was watching a few of them. Okay. I just wanted to know, like, what do you guys think is the best WrestleMania, like, overall, match-wise, and, like, just kept your excitement up?
We've actually talked about this a little bit before, too.
Mm. That's a tough one, though, because in a lot of WrestleManias, there's, like, a lot of just throwaway matches they put in there over the years, I think. I can tell you what one of the always pops into my mind as the worst WrestleMania would be WrestleMania 11.
Oh, yeah, I'd agree with you on that.
I don't know.
That was the one in Connecticut, right? Or Vermont?
I don't remember where it was at, but it was the one with Bam Bam and Lawrence Taylor in the main event.
After going back and watching it, though, like, I kind of think that WrestleMania 9 is really, really fucking horrible. That's the one that was in Vegas, and, like, the last match was the one where I think Hogan came down there and pinned Yokozuna, like, right after Bret Hart lost or something like that.
As far as, though, the best one, I think the one that I always talk about would be WrestleMania 5 for some reason. Like, that's always the one that I went back and watched as a kid. And the whole Mega Powers explode angle was amazing. Like, you can sort of catch up with that a little bit on the, if you have the Saturday Night's Main Event 3-disc set they came out with, they have a couple of things in there. The way they built up matches then were just so awesome compared to now, because they didn't have, like, 14 pay-per-views a year or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's one of my favorites for sure, and... what were some other ones that you liked?
Well, you got to go 3 in some ways just for the main event. And then, like, I always like 10 as well for the... Was 10 the one?
With the ladder match.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite one is... to tell you, I'm only 19, so I grew up during the whole Attitude Era.
Right.
So, my favorite WrestleMania would have to be WrestleMania 17. That was in Houston.
Yeah, that's one that's always... I sort of remember that show, but I need to go back and watch it, because I've heard a lot of people say good things about that show. That was like the height of the Attitude Era, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. I thought, personally, it has my favorite WrestleMania match ever, which is Stone Cold versus The Rock, when Stone Cold basically turns over and goes with Vince McMahon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Which not a lot of people understand why they did that or why he decided to do that, because it never really worked.
No. And then he tried to be like a comedic heel, too, which didn't work that well either.
And I think, do you guys remember the TLC match that was in it?
Yeah.
At WrestleMania?
With all the tag team
stuff. In my opinion, there hasn't been a better ladder match since that one. I think that's the best one they've put on, in my opinion.
Now, what year was that WrestleMania?
That was 2001.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's funny. They say that's my favorite when that came after the biggest WrestleMania ever, WrestleMania 2000. They were hyping that. Personally, I think WrestleMania 2000 is one of the weaker ones.
Yeah, I don't really remember much about that.
That was the one with the fatal four-way elimination match at the end, which I personally think was really weak.
Yeah. One of the more recent ones, though, as far as... I don't know about the whole show, but one of the matches that they sort of pushed old-school style, and it worked great, was, I think it was the year after, it was WrestleMania 18 with The Rock and Hogan. I just felt like...
Yeah.
That match was way better than it had any right to be, honestly, because this was when The Rock was... He was sort of getting out of wrestling at this time, too. This is when he was starting to get into more acting roles and stuff. And
that was probably the last decent match Hogan had, too.
Definitely.
For me, though, that's what made me buy that pay-per-view. I thought WrestleMania 18 was really weak, and if it hadn't been for that match, I probably wouldn't have. giving a shit about it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't really remember anything else about it. I just remember that match being amazing, you know, being like an old school hot match.
I think the main thing was Jericho versus Triple H on that pay-per-view, actually. Like, that was when Jericho had the undisputed title reign and all that stuff.
Yeah. But I think, actually, the one, I think it was like, was it 24? The one with, no, it might have been, I think 25 was really good, too. The one with the first Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, which I thought was great. I mean,
that match was all.
That was,
Yeah,
that was like only the second time they ever wrestled, which was bizarre because both of those guys had been there forever, you know. And they really delivered on that one.
But you were saying, talking about the weaker ones. I don't like WrestleMania 2. Really?
Yeah. The first two actually, they're not that good. They're not that well. Like, there's nothing really memorable on any of those shows.
Mm-hmm. And WrestleMania 15, I didn't like. That was the one in Philadelphia that had the Hell in a Cell match between Undertaker and Big Boss Man.
Oh, hell, I don't even remember that. That must have really been horrible.
Yeah, that's the one where they raised the Hell in the Cell, and he had, like, the noose.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That was when he was Warlock Undertaker, right? When he was going around killing everybody.
Yeah, they had something.
Yeah, when everyone was in his ministry, it was like Shane and Edge and Christian and stuff.
Yeah. They had the beginning of the song, something like, he's talking forever, and he's like, you will obey the purity of evil, doodly-doo, and then it starts his music finally, you know. But, man, we appreciate you calling, as people can tell. I mean,
yeah, we could go on about this shit forever, but you only asked for one best or worst, so we give like 10, I think.
Yeah. But call back any time, talk wrestling with it. It's always cool to talk about something
all right,
a little different.
Thanks for taking my call.
All right, man.
Take care.
Take it easy.
You too.
So what's some more questions we got over there, Uncle Bill?
Oh, this is a long one, so buckle yourself in. This is from Cody LL, who says, I'd like you guys to quickly give me your thoughts on some movies I've either never heard you mention, or if you did, it was very briefly. Most are thrillers, and most are good, but some are horror and sci-fi, and some are downright awful. Okay, so here he goes. Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. I love that movie. I think it's one of the better Hitchcock movies, actually.
Really about anything Hitchcock does, you can't really... I don't know if the guy's ever made a real bad movie.
Well, the guy
that I've seen, at least.
Really, if you think about it, he took a concept that was completely stupid and made it actually suspenseful and terrifying, which is Killer Birds. I mean, not a lot of people can pull that off.
Yeah, it didn't work with Zombie 5.
No. Okay, Rear Window.
Rear Window's another one. I love that one even more than The Birds, actually.
Jimmy Stewart. You got to love anything Jimmy Stewart's in. Anyway.
Yeah, and wasn't it Grace Kelly was also in that?
Yeah, I think
fucking hotter than hell around that time.
Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction is another one. It's an awesome movie, but it's also scary. I mean, there are differences between movies like Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead, zombie movies, stuff that's supernatural that you know can't happen. But everyone knows that's ever had any kind of relationship or anything, there are crazy motherfuckers out there for real. Been in contact with them. And that's what made Fatal Attraction even more terrifying, I think, is it's something that can really happen.
Okay, yeah, I like Fatal Attraction a lot. I actually like this movie better than I like Fatal Attraction, though, when I saw it in the theater. And that it's kind of the same type of movie, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, with Rebecca De Mornay.
Yep.
And who was a guy in it? I don't remember.
He'd been in a lot of stuff. I can't. Matt McCoy, is that his name?
Yeah, I think so.
The guy was in Police Academy.
I think it was him, yeah. But I love that movie. It's like a really, really underrated movie. And it actually goes hand in hand with Fatal Attraction because De Mornay gives a great performance like Glenn Close did. Lakeview Terrace, I haven't seen.
I've actually got that in there, just never watched it.
The Guardian, which if this is the movie I'm thinking of, is a William Friedkin movie that was fucking awesome about this woman that comes in as a nanny, actually. And she's like some sort of evil spirit that is part of the forest, and she's taking care of these people's kids, and she's trying to like... She's somehow or another trying to sacrifice their kid.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's hard to find. I think it's out of print from Anchor Bay, actually. Fear with Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon.
I don't mind that movie that much. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't seen it.
One of the very first ones with Mark Wahlberg in it. It's basically like Reese Witherspoon's really young in this, too. This came out like 94, 95, something like that. And meets up with Mark Wahlberg, and at first everything's okay, and then he goes nutty, you know, and just starts stalking her and stuff like that. Not that bad of a movie, though. I actually kind of liked it.
Okay, Evolver.
I never heard of it.
Me either. The Mothman Prophecies I thought sucked. I watched it.
I don't bother watching shit with Richard Gere.
I hated that movie.
Unless it's Shall We Dance.
Yeah, of course. Wolf Creek. I've never seen this movie all the way through. I've watched it about halfway through and just couldn't get into it.
I don't know. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought basically the visuals made it watchable for me, like the landscape and stuff.
He also says, as always, you guys are killer. Well, thank you, Cody.
Thank you, Cody. You're killer too, Bubsy. Okay. Jason Pace, and then we'll take another phone call if people want to call in. Clubber Lang versus Tommy Gunn.
Clubber Lang, that's easy.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you, Balboa.
The one thing that, basically, why in the fuck would you name somebody Tommy Gunn? Like, that's just fucking retarded. That automatically takes points away from his character.
Like Clubber Lang is, like somebody named Clubber.
Yeah, but at least that's not like just fucking, I don't know, I just see Tommy Gunn as like just a gimmick for like a early 80s wrestler or something.
I think Clubber Lang's much more like menacing heel.
Yeah, Clubber Lang worked better, and he actually killed Mickey in a way.
So he did, yeah.
That makes him more of an asshole.
Go away from me, old fool.
Bad boy, I'm better than you, bitch. We got a batch of questions here from our good buddy Jeremy Caudle. Let's see. Want to know if we've ever seen Hobgoblins. No, I've never seen Hobgoblins. I was talking to somebody about it the other day. He saw it on Mystery Science Theater, and it's close to Troll 2 and how bad it is. And they even made a sequel 20 years later.
I've never seen it either, but it sounds like it'd be awesome.
Yeah. Motel Hell remake. I have no clue what happened with that. I haven't heard anything about it.
They ran out of money.
Yeah, it cost them too much. Where we get the music for the show? What do you mean? I mean, the music is 80s music, primarily.
He gets it off Hulu and Pandora.
I rip it off. We don't... Yeah.
A question then. Real quick. Kentucky Wildcats are likely to be 3-0 after this Saturday game against Akron. Do you believe?
We still believe. We still believe.
I still believe.
I still believe. I think we'll win. But we do have a call now, Uncle Bill. Somebody on the call. Hello. You're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hey, guys. How you doing? This is Army of Dead Pit from the message board.
What was your name again?
Army of Dead Pit, or Army of D, maybe.
Oh, okay. Cool. What's going on, sir?
It's actually Army of Dorkness. Sorry, I've got a couple different things. Hey, I know you guys are talking about Sylvester Stallone and stuff tonight. I was just curious. I didn't know if anybody talked about it yet or not, but have you guys been following Let Me In or Let the Right One In? Have you been following that at all?
The new one? You mean the remake?
Yeah, the remake that's coming out. I know it's called Let Me In, which is the original book title, I guess, and it was called Let the Right One In. There's been different variations and stuff, but are you guys getting excited about that at all? I know it's a remake, and not everybody's really fans of the remakes, but it seems like this is one that's going to be a little bit different.
Actually, like, I wasn't at all excited about it when I heard the news that they were going to do it, because it just doesn't seem like American filmmakers or anybody like that can make those type of movies that come from overseas. But after seeing the previews of it, it almost looks exactly like the other film. The way that it's filmed, the tone of the film and the actors that they got, it's like, it looks a lot more promising than I originally thought from hearing about the movie. So I'm actually kind of excited about it.
That's good. I'm glad to hear you guys are pretty excited about it. So you think you'll do a Dead Pit on the Road for it, do you think?
Oh, yeah, we'll definitely do that one.
Yeah, anything like that, I mean, you can almost guarantee that we'll get to it if we can. I got to say, though, I mean, I didn't think the trailer looked that promising for a couple of reasons. I mean, I don't think you need to show the little girl as like a, just sort of like a vampire creature, which I think they're sort of hinting at. Like, I would just rather it be along the lines of, You know, she doesn't really turn into anything. She's just, you know, the teeth grow out or something like that and make it more of a, you know, just not as a hokey, I guess.
Right. I think they're trying to walk the fine line of, I know you guys are big fans of Twilight and everything, of course, right? But I know that that aspect right there seems to be the, you know, the fine line or the whatever you want to call it, that is trying to attract the Twilight crowd too. You know, maybe
people
that don't research movies. Yeah.
At this point, it's kind of like everything is about True Blood and Twilight. Like, it's trying to hook that audience in to come and see movies like this. Even though that movie, the original movie, had absolutely nothing in common with either one of those movies and was nothing like any kind of vampire movie, really. It's just that they have to do something like that now to market these movies. Otherwise, nobody will go and see them.
Right, I think this is the last attempt. I know we're kind of in this, to me it seems like we're in kind of a vampire phase. I don't know if you guys get that impression here, but last, you know, year or two or whatever, but it's like, you know, how everything comes in cycles, horror comes in cycles, certain aspects of horror, types of horror comes in cycles. It's like this vampire thing. It almost seems like it's at the ass end of the vampire cycle. And this, to me, is something that seems like could possibly redeem it before it finally closes, if that makes any sense.
I'm kind of hoping that at this point, though, that the vampire shit will just die. Like, I'm hoping people will get tired of it, because all it is now is just really an excuse to make these really bad dramas. But just because you throw a vampire in there, it's just kind of like it's considered cool. So you got all these horrible romantic comedy kind of dramas coming out that just have vampires in them instead of actors, and it's just the same story.
Well,
when you do,
I think that they're at the point now when they're starting to do too many vampire movies. Then you're getting these spoof movie Vampire Sucks and stuff. It's getting to where now, I mean, if anybody thought, of course, with the Twilight shit, I don't know if anybody ever thought any of that shit was scary, but the whole vampire thing is just becoming more of a hokey thing now. Which a movie like Let Me In, It would definitely hurt the audience and just the viewing of that movie if the whole lore of vampires is more of a joke now. You know, they're overdoing it a little bit.
Right. Yeah. That's why I thought that for this movie it might be if there's a chance at all to redeem it. You know, before this phase ends or whatever, this might be it. I mean, of course, it's horror is never going to die and it's going to keep going, but hopefully this will be one of the last, you know, trend or phase cycles of vampires movies that we have.
I think it's sort
of
similar.
End on a good note.
Yeah, I think it's sort of similar to what happened with the Scream-style slasher movies in the 90s. I mean, they were just sticking so much by that formula of Scream that it really, the directors that were trying to make something scary just ended up making something that was fucking ridiculous, you know.
Right, because they ran out of ideas or whatever it was. But do you guys, I mean, not to beat a dead horse, I know we're talking a lot about this, but do you ever read, like, scripts or the books for any of these movies before or after you watch any of them?
No, I don't think I've ever really read a script for any movie, come think of it.
That we weren't associated with. I mean, we've read the script for stuff that we did.
Yeah, that's true.
But they...
So,
yeah.
Like, when, and I know you talked about Stephen King books and stuff there, like, a couple weeks ago and everything. Have you ever read, like, any of his books before you saw the movie or, you know, went back and read the book afterwards?
Oh, yeah.
And liked it or didn't like it, things like that?
I think we've both done that a couple of times anyway. Like, I went back and I actually read Thinner before the movie came out, and then I went back and read It after I saw It when I was probably when I was like 12, 13 years old when that movie
you
came out.
You saw It. You know
yeah.
You saw It.
Just if I like a movie of his enough, then I'll try to go back and read, especially if it's one of his short stories. I know,
like,
you've read some of them too.
Yeah, the only, like, the short story book is the one that I've looked at the different seasons. I actually read the At Pupil before I saw the movie, which I was like, when I read that story, I was like, how in the fuck can they make a movie about that? And they sort of changed it up a little bit in the movie. So I'm hoping that's
so
one.
So whenever
they,
you
go ahead,
read a book of any of the movies. Do you feel like it completes the picture or it changes your perspective on it when you do that?
It depends on which one it is. Really. Like, for, I thought Thinner was an awesome book and just one of the worst fucking movies ever. And it really bothered me because I really liked the book so much that it came out as bad as it did. And then With it, though, I mean, I thought the book and the movie, because it stayed pretty close to the book in a lot of different ways. Maybe a couple things toward the end were different, but I thought that that was a good book, too. So maybe it kind of, like, added on to it for that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just wondered if you guys had ever done that, because I always find myself doing that. I'll either see, you know, read the book before the movie or vice versa, and, you know, one of the two or both, it kind of fills in the holes for the other. You know, what the movie doesn't show, the book fills in. Sometimes the movie changes a little bit, and then it gives you different perspectives and stuff. And I just know that, you know, you guys watch a lot of movies. I, you know, watch a lot of horror movies and stuff, too, and when it starts to, you know, get boring, stale, whatever it is, to me, I found that that was a way to re-enrich it, you know, to look at, you know, if there was another art piece associated with it, like if it was based off of a book or whatever, maybe go back and some of the movies that you were sick of, you know, read the book, the origins of it, you know, to see where the story came from, and that helps to, you know, preserve the interest and stuff there. But anyways, I'm taking a bunch of your time tonight here, but it was good to actually talk to Uncle Bill and CK both. That's awesome. I haven't talked to you both before, but I'm going to keep posting things on the message board. And on the message board, again, I'm Army of Darkness. I'm Army of Dean here on the chat thing here tonight. But it was good to talk to you guys. Talk to you again soon, okay?
All right, man. Appreciate you calling, and take it easy.
Sure, you too. Bye now.
I don't know if that's... He may have talked to me one time before when you weren't here. You were getting your butthole bleached. One of those occasions. But, yeah, definitely anybody new calling in or wanting to call in tonight... It's 1-606-650-1855.
We do have
a lot of people posting on the Dead Pit Facebook page as well, posting your questions and shit.
You gonna read one off Facebook?
Yes, do that shit.
Ripping off my question from Don Muggins, what film scared you the most as a kid that didn't hold up when you saw it again as an adult? Interesting question. It says, kind of, sort of embarrasses you that you found it, scary. He said that his was, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, the Bob Clark movie.
I know what mine is, because this movie fucking terrified me when I was a kid, and I look back on it now, I'm like, what the hell, is Return of the Living Dead 2?
Yeah, I'm sort of with you on that one. Another sequel, you probably will laugh at this. I used to be really scared at just stupid shit in Nightmare on Elm Street 2 as a kid. God. Like, even when the little girl, Jesse's sister, I think, put on the plastic fingers and started playing with them and shit, that scared the fuck out of me as a kid.
Did the bird exploding scare
you? Yeah, just a lot of the random dumb shit scared me. But.
Okay, here we go. Giovanni Frezza's hair, that's actually the guy's name. Says, do you guys remember a movie from the late 80s, early 90s called The Invisible Maniac? It played sometimes on Skinamax. It was about a nerdy professor that was able to turn himself invisible and basically spent the next 90 minutes looking at well-endowed female students naked. Said, it's never been released on DVD. I was just wondering if you remembered this classic piece of crap.
He's a maniac. He's an invisible maniac.
I don't remember that at all.
I've never heard anything about that.
I think he made that one up.
I think he did, too. Who the fuck would have heard of that?
Adam Risky, what do you think of Judge Dredd and Demolition Man? Also,
that's weird he mentioned that, actually.
Yeah. Have you seen the trailer for Cliffhanger? It looks like the best fucking movie ever made. Too bad it wasn't. We talked about this with Felcher earlier on. We all like Demolition Man, I think, right?
Yeah, but I think we're all in agreement about
it. Not so much Judge Dredd.
No, I think we can all agree Judge Dredd sucks.
Judge Dredd? Marty Borio says, just kind of wondered, what if Stallone played Carl Childers in Sling Blade?
What the fuck? Why would you wonder that? I guess.
Hey, kid, I just got out of prison, you know what I mean? I killed a man with a sling blade. A lot of people call it a fuck blade, something else I call it a sling blade.
Actually, the voice would probably work in that.
It probably would. So, open phone line for anybody wanting to call in right now. We'll take your phone calls. No problem.
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Zach.
The Zach Attack. What's going on, dude?
Can you hear me good?
We can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I was just wondering because I'm calling from a cell phone now.
Okay, so what's going on, man? We're talking Stallone movies.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I always thought, like, the Rocky sequels were, I always liked them better than the original. Maybe because I was young and I watched them all.
Yeah, the weird thing with me and the Rocky movies, which I hold those completely separate from all the other movies Stallone did, even though a lot of people like the Rambo movies better and stuff like that. I enjoy all the Rocky movies. You know, I can't really.
Yeah, I even like Part 5, which a lot of people hate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind Part 5. A lot of people give it flat because Rocky doesn't really fight in a boxing ring in the end of it, but. It's not. I didn't think it was that bad of a movie.
I really think that 3 has become my favorite, though, just since the last time we watched it, and I've seen it a couple more times now, just because of how over the top it is and how, not, yeah, pardon the pun, over the top, but just how, like, amazing Mr. T is in that role, and everything is just, like, amped up to 10. It got a little bit more silly, actually, in Part 4, but I thought that Part 3 was just, like, a right balance of it being kind of like a cartoon character and a real guy put together.
Yeah, I always like Part 3 probably the most.
Yeah, I mean, all of them, though, I even like 4. There's like, it seems like about half a dozen vignettes, or what do they call them, just
montages.
Montages, yeah. That have like fucking 4 or 5 different songs from Survive.
Ain't no easy way out.
Yeah.
There's no right way home. He's running in the snow and shit.
And then, yeah, they had, like, what was the other one?
In the burning hole.
Yeah. Just about to bust or something like that. You know, it was like, the only thing about 4 that kind of sucks is, like, the little spiel Stallone gives at the end that sort of, because this was around the time of the Cold War and stuff. He was like, hey, if I could change, you could change. We can all change out here.
Yeah.
You
know,
it's kind of gay.
And the, I will break you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was around the time, too.
Who
I think
was that?
That was Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
You know the weirdest fucking thing about Dolph Lundgren, though, and I just found this out? Did you know that he was actually accepted to MIT for like an advanced, I think it's like chemical engineering degree?
I had no idea.
The guy's like a fucking genius, but you'd never know that by anything that he's been in.
He's never really played a genius in any of his movies.
No.
Just like that.
I haven't seen much of Stallone's movies. I've seen Demolition Man when I was young, and I remember liking that.
Yeah, Stallone. I got to be honest. I think Stallone overall is pretty consistent up until probably the 90s.
I actually like some of the movies he's done that are kind of shitty that people think are bad. They're like Assassins.
Assassins.
Yeah, with Antonio Banderas and that stuff. I actually could like that movie. And I love Stopper My Mom Will Shoot. That was awesome. I was kidding about that.
Yeah.
That one actually sucks.
So you really enjoy that?
Yeah.
It just seemed like for a while there, Stallone, I guess it was before he did the last Rocky movie, which really sort of brought him back to doing theatrical films. He was doing a lot of these movies that were more like direct to video.
Yeah,
stuff.
I think The Specialist and Assassins were kind of like that, though. They felt like they were direct to DVD.
Yeah, and he had
VHS
like
movie.
Get Carter was another one that he did. And
what was the one where he was the sheriff? Copland.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, that one was weird too.
But I guess since the he was finally able to do the last Rocky movie, which I didn't think that was that great, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it wasn't.
But that sort of revived his career, and now he's doing.
I blame that a lot more on the guy that was the heel in that movie, though. What was his name? Mason Dixon. Like, I always hated that character. Yeah. Just is the most boring character.
Nothing really memorable about him at all.
No, and it seems like he just comes in for like the last 20 minutes of the movie. You don't know shit about him until the end.
No.
He's just.
But, Zach, man, we appreciate you calling. I think you'll be the last caller of the night. We're going to answer a couple more fan questions here, but always good to hear from you, and call back anytime.
All right, guys. Bye.
All right, take it easy.
See you, man.
the Zach Attack. He's called in a couple of times since we started doing these live call-ins. I have noticed, if anything, from these live call-ins, even though we don't have a lot of people in the chat room or anything, we have had new callers get through now that we're doing this, so that's good. Other fan questions over Uncle Bill.
Living Dead Girl says, hey, you guys, I was wondering what your thoughts would be on the newest British horror movie, The Zombie Diaries 2. And then there's an article on here from Dread Central says, the final sequence is being filmed in Wales in November. I was thinking of auditioning to be a zombie in this movie since it's actually being filmed in a small town called Aberystwyth as a part of a Wales Horror Film Festival, which is an hour from where I attend university. I attend university.
Hey, mate. All right. I'll tell you, though, if Living Dead Girl ever wants to visit Eastern Kentucky, I'll show her around.
You show her not out on the town with
I'll
Living Dead.
I'll show you a good time, Living Dead Girl,
that's
baby.
That's going to be them dancing and romancing and some swinging
she
and ring-a-linging.
Hey, she the one got a dead pet tattoo on one of her titties, baby. I love it.
But I haven't heard anything about this movie, though, Zombie Diaries 2. I haven't even heard anything about the original Zombie Diaries.
Zombie Diaries, the first one, was one of those Dimension Extreme movies. I've never seen it.
So I apologize, Living Dead Girl, but I hope you get in the movie, though, because that'd be awesome to see you up on the big screen.
Another lovely lady of Dead Pit, baby, Natalie, says, in regards to Stallone films, I have to admit I just watched Rambo for the first time a couple of months ago. Call me a slacker, but I can't help it. Says, I enjoyed it and was wondering which Rambo film was your favorite. Oh, that's Rob Nat from the board. I know who that is. The first one's my favorite.
I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. What was the question?
Favorite Rambo movie.
Oh, shit. Yeah, in hindsight, I used to say part two, but it probably is part one for me, too. Just for the damn big breakdown sequence he has in the end of it, where he's like, it's not my war! It's not my war!
Nobody wants me no more!
I got people that spit on me!
And it does have Brian Dennehy in it.
Yeah.
That automatically makes it killer. Let's see here. I'll refresh this. I think we have one more question. Worst Stallone comedy.
Holy shit, there's 100 of them that are horrible.
Wants to know, is it Rhinestone, which was also directed by Bob Clark? I don't think we ever talked to him about that when we interviewed him.
No.
Oscar, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, or Party at Kitty and Studs, a.k.a. Italian Stallion.
That's a porn, isn't it?
Yeah, that's his porno.
I think that, Jesus, man, Rhinestone's pretty fucking bad, and so is Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, but I think Oscar was overall one of the worst films.
Which one was Oscar? I don't really, I remember the name.
It's the one with, I've told you about this a couple of times. It's the one with Marissa Tomei where he's a gangster and Marissa Tomei's his fucking daughter and she's like, he won't ever let her out of the house and she wants to go off, run off with this guy. And it's basically a comedy between like him and her fighting throughout the movie. That's the whole fucking movie.
How old is it?
It's 90s, I'd say. Oh, like, okay. Probably early 90s.
Yeah, I can't really give you an opinion, Splatterpunk, because I don't remember hardly any of, I remember Rhinestone, but mainly I only remember the fucking poster art on it. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Dolly Parton.
Yeah. I wonder if he got to touch Dolly Parton's titties.
I know he sings in that movie, which in and of itself is fucking hilarious.
It's probably worse than Clint Eastwood singing in Honky Tonk Man.
Well, just imagine his speaking voice and him trying to sing.
I'm going to sing a song over here. Yeah, so anyway, that's it for the fan portion. We ran long again. But that's how it goes, isn't it, Uncle Bill?
Oh, yeah, it's time to get out.
That's how the fucking cookie crumbles.
Let's get out of here.
So we're going to take a break and get to some DVD, Blu-ray reviews and announcements and all that good stuff after this break here on
DeadBear.com. There's one other thing we got to do, too.
Yeah,
you don't want to forget that.
We'll do that in announcements.
You don't want to forget that right now.
We're going to take a break now, okay?
You don't want to forget it.
Yeah, we're going to take a break.
No.
Hey, yo. It's Bobby fucking De Niro over here. Let me tell you a little something. It's this new podcast out there. It's called Profondo Cinema. Yeah, a couple guys, Axel and Jay Scott, a couple of knuckleheads from around the way. It's hot like it's coming off the back of my fucking truck over here. Don't be a wise guy. Get your ass down there and check them out. ProfondoCinema.com. And remember, It's going to be a good summer.
This is Dan Myrick, co-writer, co-director of the Blair Witch Project, and you're listening to Dead Pit Radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. Welcome back to the program.
Folks. Hi. It's the program you've all been waiting for.
Yeah, wasn't that awesome, though, those phone calls we got and fucking taking that H.L. Dreamer?
I am still a dark dreamer.
That's great, because now it's time to review some shit.
It is. But we do have some announcements we need to make. Talking about the new Dead Pit t-shirt, which next week will be available to get them.
Oh, my God!
Aren't you excited?
I am, because those t-shirts look fucking awesome, actually.
They're red.
That's going to be killer.
They're feisty.
That's going to be fucking killer.
So, yeah, it's actually the very first new Dead Pit design we've had since the original t-shirts as far as, like, Dead Pit Radio related. So, it's pretty cool.
We've had two designs. Actually, three.
The others were never available on the website, though.
That's true.
Yeah. It's like, you know. So, if you want to be a baller.
And a shot caller.
You better get one of them shirts. Seriously.
Yeah, it probably is, in my opinion, one of the best looking shirts we've ever had.
One of the best looking shirts that's ever existed.
Existed in the history of the earth, yeah, really.
So, you'll want to grab your shirt. You know, and the way I look at it is this. There's a slogan. Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. We invented the fucking game, folks.
And you know it's all about the game and how you play it.
We are the innovators, creators, the ballers, the shot callers, the poppers, and the showstoppers.
And before us, none of this shit existed. None of it. I don't care what anybody says. Before us, before we started doing this show, nobody did anything like this at all. They didn't.
No.
I dare you find anybody that did anything like this show before we did it.
Them mother Canuckers up in Canada playing a bunch of shitty Canadian rock music and talking about horror for about 5 minutes of the show. But you didn't have Dead Pit. You didn't have it.
You,
we created it all. We are. We are the creators, the innovators, the masturbators.
We actually did create the whole horror genre, as a matter of fact.
We did.
Before us, it didn't exist.
Yeah. Something else funny, though, that I wanted to mention on here. Uncle Bill's got gas tonight. And he was proud of himself because he actually let a manly fart while ago.
It's that cornbread, I think.
You know not, baby, not cornbread. Didn't even ask me for some.
You ain't getting my cornbread.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded good. I'm proud of you, Uncle Bill.
I appreciate that.
You know, normally, Uncle Bill's farts are like just little air bubbles or something like.
You do realize you're the only person I've ever heard make fun of somebody for the farts.
Well, buddy, when you fart, you gotta fart with vengeance. You gotta let it all go.
Like you when you like grab beside your ass cheek to hold it open so the fart's more like pronounced.
That's right. I want my farts to whistle.
It's like, blah, blah, blah.
My farts are like a fucking monster trying to escape my ass. That's what they sound like. So you better back away if you see me just leaning over a little bit. Cause
I ain't fucking joking either. You know it's bad when you're making compilations of farts on your iPhone.
I don't do that. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's right.
Yeah. But another announcement. Somebody had a special birthday earlier this week, Uncle Bill.
Somebody very near and dear to the show.
Yeah. He's actually the Uncle Bill stand-in.
Mm-hmm.
Cause,
he's like the Ted White of Uncle Bill's.
Yeah, he's like the Uncle Bill stuntman. Mm-hmm. Connor Scott turned the big 13 years old.
Eighth grade, right? Started eighth grade.
That's right.
You know, you remember eighth grade.
Eighth grade was off the chain.
You remember what goes on in eighth grade?
Yeah.
That's when you started smoking weed.
Yeah, everything went downhill.
Yeah.
I started shitting on porches in 8th grade. That was a rough time.
Do you want to sing the song? You want to sing the birthday song, or you think that would be that'd be too much? We should leave it classy. I think that's what we should do. We should stop right now and leave it classy.
But I like my women just a little bit on the trashy side.
When their hair's, what is it?
When their clothes are too tight and their hair's dyed.
There you go.
Confederate Railroad reference on Deadpin. Mm-hmm. There's a first for everything.
You ready? Which one are we singing? There's two different ones. Now.
Is there? I don't know what the other one is.
You remember the first one we used to do? You want to do that one?
Yeah.
All right.
Because I don't know what the second one is.
We did the second one last time. Somebody, I don't know who it was now.
Did we do? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Doodly-doo.
Yeah, we did that one.
I don't remember that other one.
Oh, you have to go back and listen to it. I don't remember what it was either. We changed it around, though.
You invented, like, okay.
No, I really didn't. Like, whoever it was we did the last birthday thing for was a completely different song.
Let me turn my vibrator on and play as you a little bit.
Ow! But anyway.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. You can suck the fuck till the fuck sucks you. Happy birthday to you.
And don't go messing around in your Ma and Pa's drawers. You might find something that sounds like you. Oh!
Something's drilling through the cabinet, Ma.
What in the hell's this thing, Mom?
Oh, my Lord.
It smells like the dumpster at Long John Silver.
Sorry. That's just how it goes sometimes.
Actually, it was going okay, and then you took it one step too far with that.
One step beyond.
One step over the line.
Yeah,
are you ready, though?
Or I'm ready. I'm ready for Freddy.
Okay.
So and Sunnyland.
Well, the first review we've got,
you're
though,
vibrating over now. You ought to stick that phone down your crotch.
Woo! Oh, well, I hope I get a bunch of texts right in a row.
Yeah. Somebody call my ass.
Tangled my little dick. I wish you could see some of the goddamn expressions he makes while he's saying this.
Yeah, you'd be fucking standing at attention like a Vienna sausage in no time.
Woo! Anyway, the first movie up for review is Sylvester Stallone's 1989 fucking masterpiece, Lock Up, starred Sonny Landham. He was a big star of the film.
he was in it.
Hey, Stallone, I'm going to stick you this ball unless you give me something.
Give me your cigarette, Stallone. I'll beat the shit out of your
head. I want that chain on your neck.
Anyway, Donald Sutherland plays the warden in this film. I believe John Amos is... most people remember him from Coming to America.
Yeah. He's like John Amos is like, God, was he a boxer or something? How in the fuck did his nose get that goddamn fucked up?
I have no idea. But this is one of those movies, I don't know what was going on around this time period, but there's all these movies about, like Harrison Ford was doing them and other people were doing them, were about these people that they end up getting locked up under, and like, he actually did another one similar to this, Tango and Cash.
Jim Barney did them too.
Well, the whole movie is basically he gets locked up under false pretenses and winds up in prison with a bunch of people that are really, like, bad, the worst of the worst, including Sonny Landham.
They're like Rikishi. They're bad men.
Yeah, and Donald Sutherland is the warden who absolutely, for some reason, just all through this movie wants to be the biggest dickhead to Sylvester Stallone.
Stallone must have shit on his porch. Yeah. The movie is fucking really good, though, believe it or not. I mean, there's some stuff that definitely doesn't add up in it. Like, these prisoners have way too much freedom in this movie. Yeah. I've noticed that.
Well, I guess under Sutherland, like, they get to do whatever they want, like, as long as they help him get Stallone and all this shit.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about, like, okay, one example. They're fixing up a vintage car. How could they do that in prison?
You can't really, because I actually heard a story one time about a guy that was a psychologist in a prison, and they had a shop like that where they let inmates They let inmates work on cars as part of like their work program or whatever in there. Mm-hmm. And they ended up cutting the brakes on one of the cars and trying to get somebody killed, so they had to stop doing that. Not a good idea. Because they have fucking inmates in a prison.
Yeah, that was the one thing like that was just made lockup a little too unbelievable. Is like there was just way too much freedom for these inmates in the movie.
Okay. But, yeah, there's a lot of things in this movie that are unbelievable, including the fact that Donald Sutherland's got such a huge hard-on for Sylvester Stallone. Like, it's his sole purpose in this movie to make his life live in hell.
Mm.
And something like
that. Yeah, including killing one of his buddies as a prisoner just to fucking piss him off. For no other reason, just to piss him off.
But you got to admit, though, that Donald Sutherland is a pretty good heel in this movie. He's pretty good heavy.
He's always, I mean, he always plays pretty much the bad guy in a lot of the movies that he's in, as does his son.
Oh, Kiefer.
Kiefer.
Kiefer Sutherland. But the best part of this movie to me, though, was definitely the fact that I had no idea going into it that Sonny Landon was in it. And I'd forgotten.
He's in it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's probably his biggest role since Predator, you know.
He's actually in it more than he is in Predator, I think. I mean, he's like the leader of this gang in the prison that, is hired, or I don't know, whatever, by the warden to, make Sylvester Stallone's life live in hell pretty much throughout his entire stay. And the whole point of the story is the warden wants to make Stallone crack so he'll do something so he can't get out, you know, because he's due to be released here in a few weeks, and he just keeps fucking with him until he finally decides to do something about it.
And he does something, buddy. He breaks his fucking own code.
That's right. Yeah, but I like the movie quite a bit. I'd seen the movie a couple of times before. I think it's one that I actually watched in a theater when it came out when I was a kid. And it holds up pretty well overall. I mean, I think it's one of the better Stallone movies from that era, no doubt. I think it's one of the last really good ones that he did. It had to be, because in the 90s, his career was shit. This is like the late 80s.
Yeah, and we were talking to Felcher about this a little bit. For some reason, we got on the subject of this movie and talking about the director as being dead now, I believe. And it's just, I'm not even sure what the director did after this, though, or before this, or...
Yeah, Felcher knew there was something that he was, like, famous for. The
guy's name is John Flynn, though. But still, it's a really, really good cast. I think that's one thing you can give the guy credit for. He at least tried to put together a movie that wasn't so hokey and stuff like with Tango and Cash, where they put together Kurt Russell and Stallone for no real apparent reason other than...
Yeah, and we were talking about... we have a thread on the board, a poll, that is The Expendables versus Machete. And in a way...
Has anybody voted for The Expendables yet?
One person.
Probably Rambo.
One person, yeah. I can look and see if he voted. It's like 23-1.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or last time I looked, so.
But this actually, this movie.
Machete is actually in this, though, and really briefly
Danny
is
Trejo.
A prisoner.
This movie actually only came out because of The Expendables on Blu-ray. Because this is one of the movies that Lionsgate released in their quest to release any movie that they had the rights for before The Expendables came out to try to drum up interest in the movie. And this is, we were talking about Johnny Handsome, and we're talking about this one. There's a couple more too. I think the Rambo collection they released on Blu-ray. So I'm actually pretty happy about that, because with this and the Rambo collection, they're all pretty solid entries.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I guess we'll need to talk about is the transfer on this, the Blu-ray, and if it's like one of those that they just sort of threw out there, or they go back and remaster it. And I don't really know exactly how the director wanted this movie to look. All I can say is like, I didn't really think it looked like a HD transfer throughout most of the movie. I mean, it's a very light picture. I mean, it doesn't have that deep contrast that a lot of the remastered movies look like.
I'd like to ask
real smoky looking.
I'd like to ask Don May about this. If there's some way that they just rush, if they have some generic way that they just rush a lot of these movies through HD processing that they don't like spend a lot of money on. The titles like this where they just want to get it out there on Blu-ray. There's got to be something that they do that makes, that separates those from the ones that look really, really good, that they're able to just get them out there. And I'd like to know what that is.
But at the same time, I mean, you got to look at it like this. A lot of these, like this is going to be like fucking $8 or $10.
Yeah, it probably is already $10.
So it's not like they're going to, like some, certain studios, I'm not going to name names, but certain studios have charged you $20, $25 for an inferior HD transfer. And that happens all the time. But, I mean, it's not, it, definitely, I mean, if you've got the DVD of it, not unless you're a big fan of the movie, I don't know if I'd get it again on this version of HD DVD, or I mean the Blu-ray. I just don't, I mean, the same extras are on there, and it's not really, the transfer's really not that amazing.
Yeah, we'll talk about the extras though real quick. You got a making of featurette, Sylvester Stallone profile behind the scenes, interviews with the cast, and the theatrical trailer. And that's what you got, mama. But this is 1080p high definition.
1080p.
So, the last movie we want to review on this week's show, Uncle Bill, is one that's been highly anticipated. A lot of folks have been waiting on it. And it is, aside from a VHS release back in the early 80s, never received a proper release on home video. But that time has changed because, thanks to VCI Entertainment, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow is here. And just in time for the Halloween season.
I actually have a really special place in my heart for this movie for a couple of different reasons. Larry Drake, probably being among the most.
You break for Drake.
I do break for Drake, and this is like one of the only movies I can think of besides Darkman and Dr. Giggles, where he's actually really prominently featured and worth
the
shit in.
At least the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and it's just a really well-made movie, too. Like, it seems like it'd be stupid because of the concept being about a killer scarecrow, but that's really not the
basis
of the movie. Yeah. It's more like a revenge thriller kind of movie, I would say.
Talking about the plot of the film itself, and ever since I heard about the plot, I was really interested in seeing it. And we did do an initial review of it a couple of years ago. We got like a bootleg DVD of it. The whole story is Bubba, who is mildly retarded.
Which is, for some reason, a Larry Drake trademark.
Larry Drake, yeah, he does play a good retard. We got to
I think they gave him that role in L.A. Law because of this movie. I really do. I think they saw it and they were like, oh, that guy killed a retard.
So, yeah, he's very simple-minded, just a, I don't know if they try to say he's completely retarded, but yeah, just slow.
Yeah.
I guess one of those guys. And, plays with, his best friend is like a young girl, you know, 10-year-old girl. And the locals, in particular the mailman, which is played by, I think the guy's name was Charles, Durning, who is still alive, by the way. I was looking that up. That motherfucker is like in his, he's gonna be in his late 80s now, the guy that was the mailman.
Yeah.
So, an accident occurs with, the young girl, and he is blamed for it. Bubba, poor Bubba is. And he runs home to his mom and says, Mama, they're gonna kill me. Looks like I've done something to the little girl, Mama.
So, yeah, they form, like, along with the mailman and a couple of the townsfolk, they form, like, a posse to go out and hunt him down. And for some reason, he decides that the place to hide would be as a scarecrow up on the, I guess, the cross thing that the scarecrow normally rests on in a field, and they unfortunately find him, and then bad things happen.
Kill him!
Yeah.
Violently!
And, you know, being that it is called Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, one by one, they're kind of, everybody that's was part of the posse is kind
of... Well, the posse is, of course, the locals let them go.
Yeah.
In the trial, they go through all that, and one by one, of course, yeah, they're picked off by someone or something.
Is it the ghost? Is it revenge seeking?
Who knows? But it is Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
I'm scared.
Are you scared, Blair?
Yeah.
I'm scared.
You gotta admit, though, if you gonna give Larry Drake shit, he is pretty good in that role.
Yeah, but he's barren. I mean, he's not really in the movie that
and
much.
The guy, the Charles guy. That's
yeah, he plays a good asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a really well-made film, too. It was a TV movie that came out about 1980. I don't know when it was made. Pretty sure it came out in 1981. And it was like I think it was a CBS network movie. It actually came on network TV. And this was sort of at the tail end of a lot of direct-to-TV movies at the time. You had movies like beforehand, like Bad Ronald and Don't Be Afraid of the Dark and Gargoyles and stuff like that. That was, you know, at that time become sort of a cult following for those type of movies. But I honestly think the best one that I've seen would be Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. It's just the cast is so well done, you know, so well cast. And just the movie itself, and you don't really see, it's not like one of those movies where you see a killer scarecrow, attacking people or something like
no,
that.
No, not really.
It's not hokey like that.
You don't really ever see the person attacking.
Yeah, them. they sort of keep you guessing in it. And even by the, you know, they don't really false advertise by the cover as well. I mean, even though you do see a scarecrow with a pitchfork pointed at you. That is from a scene in the movie, so I got to give him credit. And yeah, for folks that haven't seen this, though, I can't recommend it enough, especially for something cool to watch in Halloween season. I think it'd be perfect for that.
Yeah, as far as TV movies go, I mean, there's very few of them that were as well made as this one. I definitely recommend it. And the thing is, I hope that this is the is this the cover they're going to use for the DVD, extra
yeah.
DVD release? Because this is an awesome fucking cover, too.
Yeah, we got this, the screener know, like, copy.
How well you can make that out, but I thought that, as far as new artwork on re-releases, it's probably some of the best that I've seen.
Yeah, it's awesome artwork. And something else we need to talk about, too, because there's an awful lot of complaining about the Madman DVD and how they've messed the transfer up on that. Make no mistake about it, folks. The way that they did the remastering on this is just unreal how awesome they made this movie look. And my only regret is that it doesn't have a Blu-ray release, because that's something like the transfer is showcased even more in high def. But hey, you know, it's the best this movie has ever looked. I'm positive it didn't look nearly this good even when it came on TV.
No, there's no way. But yeah, the transfer on this is absolutely amazing. And like you, I don't know. I guess they just didn't have the money to put out a Blu-ray yeah. or something to that effect. But it looks as good as it will ever look in probably ever. I mean, I can't imagine it looking much better.
So, I mean, definitely. There's not a whole lot of extras on it. I mean, you do have a new audio commentary. They have a... It's actually pretty cool. Remember back in the day when they had the TV movies and stuff and they'd have like a montage about the whole movie? Did you watch that?
Hmm.
That's what the CBS Network premiere promo thing
is.
Oh,
okay.
So it's pretty cool. And that actually looked awesome, too. Looked like they'd... but not a whole lot of extras on it. But it does feature 5.1 audio and VCI Entertainment. They haven't done a whole lot of genre stuff that we've reviewed. But they did a really good job with this DVD, and on all accounts, I mean, I really got to put them over. You can visit the website at vcient.com. Check it out.
That's Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, though. It's awesome as shit. Trust me.
It is an amazing movie.
Yep.
And, yeah, one that I would highly recommend for any of your Halloween horror fest this coming Halloween season.
We got to do. Here's what we need to do. We need to put this one in there for this year's Halloween fest and Dr. Giggles. I think you need
how about
to,
not?
I think you need to reevaluate Dr.
No.
Giggles. We'll have a Drake-a-thon.
No. You know how much I hate Dr. Giggles?
How much?
I saw it for $3 at Big Lots and still didn't even think about getting it.
You don't think we can have a Drake-a-thon?
No.
Come on.
We actually want people to stay awake.
You put this one on, though, this will grab their attention. Dr. Giggles, that'll
Dr.
ride
Dr. Giggles
down.
Put them to sleep. So anyway, yeah, grab Dark Knight of the Scarecrow violently, and if you see Dr. Giggles, just throw it in the trash. That's where it belongs. So.
I do want to get that Blu-ray, though. That's one I will buy for Halloween, actually.
Well, you can watch it by yourself.
No, you're going to watch it with me, you son of a bitch. No.
But appreciate everybody. Felcher for joining us in the mic check. Everyone for calling in and participating on the Dead Pit Facebook page. Remember, deadpit.com fans on Facebook. Check it out. We want to get over 1,000 followers by the end of the year. It'd be neat.
We'll do it. We'll do it all right now.
So until next week when we're doing whatever the hell we want to do, because I don't know. We can't plan ahead.
Nope.
I'm the Creep Kentucky.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And you've been listening to the Ballers.
And the Shot Callers.
Of Horror Talk Radio. Over at DeadPill.com. We're the tobacco spitting.
Oh, God. Pork shitting.
Dick beating.
Dick beating.
Yeah.
I don't know. What
kind Tater of chip eating.
Okay.
Rug munching.
Rug munching?
Snickers crunching.
Buddy, you just make your shit up every week.
Woo!